Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out in a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday. That means it's Wild Card Wednesday. Hear me, Wild Card Wednesday. That means you request any artist, any song, anything, we'll play it. Get those requests in and we'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. Hey, coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Dick DiBartolo is going to join us. He's been on the show several times, been a part of the show for many years. We heard the really sad news earlier this week that Mad Magazine is going to cease publication. As you know, Dick DiBartolo has been with Mad Magazine for over 50 years and has been one of their best writers, contributing some of the funniest stuff and some of the greatest parodies and satires that the magazine had ever seen. And Mad Magazine was a big part of my youth and a big part of forming my my comedic voice and all of that stuff. And it made me very sad to hear this. So we're going to talk about the details behind that and some mad stories. And also, as you know, Dick worked on Match Game back in the heyday of Match Game and helped create some of the greatest characters and questions in the history of that show. And he is also the Giz Whiz gadget guy, and he's the co-host of the Giz Whiz at gizwhiz.tv, and you can check him out on ABC World News now. He loves gadgets, he loves gizmos, you know, and we'll get into that as well. But the top thing that we're going to talk about is Mad Magazine, and remember some of the great times, and what is the future for Mad Magazine with the great Dick DiBartolo. He'll be joining us in just a couple of minutes. After the 2 o'clock news, we're going to talk with Steve Dawson. He's a singer and a songwriter, very talented guy. He's going to be live in studio with us. He will be in the PPG Paints green room a little bit later. We'll bring him in. He'll come in after 2 o'clock. He's playing at the Square Roots Festival this weekend. That's at Lincoln Square. He's a terrific singer-songwriter. We'll talk to him and we'll hear some music live in studio. And speaking of music, the other day marked the anniversary of the recording of Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan. It was recorded in 1962. So we'll talk about that great event. And then we're going to bust into the 50 best protest songs of all time. And we'll hear a little bit of those and talk about protest songs and hear some of those and take your calls and thoughts on that genre of music. And I'm really, really sad and heartbroken to report. I don't know if you've heard, Rip Torn passed away. One of my favorite actors, one of the greatest character actors ever, and a real man's man, passed away, died at 88, and left behind so much great work on stage and in film and on television, from Larry Sanders to Men in Black to Defending Your Life, and so much more. Brawling with Ernest Hemingway for real in life, if you've probably seen that footage on YouTube. But Rip Torn passed away, and we are going to remember him, talk about his career, and play some audio from some of his best work. So that's all coming up on the show. If you want to get a hold of us at any time, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text, 312-981-7200, and for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. And you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, let me say hello to my producer. That would be the great Tom Hush. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, man. So lots of stuff on the show this morning.
Yeah, very busy day. Yeah. All of a good busy yeah. day.
Very sad to hear Rip Torn passed away.
Yeah, I loved him.
Oh, well, he was the best, man.
He was so strange, and that voice.
Yeah, just fantastic voice. And of course, yeah, I'm assuming you've seen the footage of him and Ernest Hemingway.
Yeah.
Brawling, mm-hmm. which is like just insane.
Yeah, and I know one of the stories from one of my favorite films, Easy Rider, is that he was supposed to have Jack Nicholson's role, but then he attacked Dennis Hopper with a knife.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. He was something.
Yeah.
But we'll remember him for sure this morning. So. All right. Well, that's what's going on the show. Why don't we take a really Vic is off this week, so David Jennings is in the newsroom, and he is busy putting together the newscast right now. He's away from the mic, so we'll say hello to him a little bit later on. But anyway, Tom's here, David's here, I'm here, you're here. 312-981-7200. Quick commercial break. Then we come back. The great Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, is going to join us for one of the many visits that he's had on this show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking with Steve Dawson, singer-songwriter. He'll be live in studio, talk about his new record and the fact that he's playing at Square Roots Festival. And we're going to talk about protest songs, and we're going to remember the great Rip Torn. And Know Your Onion coming up. That's when Tom is your host, and he will read you a series of newspaper headlines, and you have to tell us news headlines, and you have to tell us whether they are real or whether they are not real, and they're fake, and they're satirical comedy from The Onion. So you answer real or onion. The real news is real weird now, and sometimes it's very, very hard to tell whether it's a real headline or from The Onion. And that's if you know it, you win it. That's how it works. And we'll do that after the 4:30 news. Know Your Onion. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Okay, my next guest is one of my favorite guests that we've had. One of the best writers that Mad Magazine ever had. Also created some amazing stuff, worked on great game shows, including the legendary Match Game. And he is the Gizwiz. And he's the co-host of the Gizwiz at gizwiz.tv. He's a gizmo and gadget freak, and we'll talk about that and much more. Reason why we're going to have modest sad news is that Mad Magazine is going to cease publication, and we wanted to talk with our good friend Dick DiBartolo about that. So we welcome Dick back to the show. Dick, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I have to clear up one thing.
Yeah.
So Mad as we know it is ending. So issue 9 is the next one out, and that's a regular Mad, and that'll be on newsstands. Then issue 10 is another regular issue of Mad, and that will not be on newsstands. That will go to subscribers and be available at comic book stores only. And then from 11 on, they're going to make compilations of old material, and it'll bear a new cover. Maybe the cover will reflect the theme of what's in Mad. So pretty much the usual gang of idiots, unless something changes, will be done with issue 10. But Mad will continue on to fulfill all the years of subscribers that they have.
Yeah, and was this a surprise to people? Because when I heard about it, I immediately was sad, because we've talked about this before. Dick, Mad Magazine had a huge impact on me when I was young.
Well, it was a total surprise to me. I actually had called to I was asking something about issue 10. And someone said, "Don't you know what's going on here?" And I said, "What's going on there?" And they said, "Well, pretty much more than half the staff's been let go." I said, "What?" And they said, well, yeah, you, what you have in 9, we're working on that now, and you already have something here for 10. They're hoping that there is an 11, because 11 would be the mad 20, the 20 weirdest things of the preceding year.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's not going to be on newsstands, I don't know if DC Comics is going to do that. So it was a total shock, a total shock.
Wow. Now, for the next two issues that you were just talking about, issues 9 and issues 10, which will be the last ones, how much contribution do you have to those?
Well, you know what? I have an ad in one of them, and I have a thing about Halloween costumes in the second one, because the second one will be out toward the middle of September, so it's a perfect Halloween issue.
Okay. All right. And is the website going to close down, or are people going to have access
to
it?
My guess is that the website will stay up, mm-hmm. so that they could update that and let people know what's going on. It's very funny. People email me and say, what's the inside story on? Well, since Mad moved to L.A., I'm just another one of the usual gang of idiots. When it was in New York, I could walk in and see circulation figures and ask John Ficarra, what are we doing with this? And there, there were 3,000 miles apart, so I had no inside scoop. And, now there's a whole hierarchy. So it's AT&T bought Warner Media.
Mm.
So then it's AT&T, Warner Media, Warner Brothers, DC Comics, MAD. So we're like five generations of executives down.
Yeah, if that's happening everywhere, with these giant corporations buying up other places. I was just really sad about it. Now, Mad Magazine launched in 1952, right, at EC?
Yes. Yes, exactly. As a comic book, satirizing other comic books. And then after a year or two, I think it was in 54, 55, they changed it to a magazine and said, we'll just satirize everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it went to the new format. And it didn't look like a comic book anymore, but like a magazine.
Yeah, those old Earth First issues, they look fantastic, but they look so different than what the magazine eventually became.
Absolutely. Good. And I was going to say, there's a Mad fans are unbelievable. There's a guy named Doug Gilford who runs this thing called Mad Cover Site, who has he must have thousands of pages of Mad stuff on there. I'm always on his website trying to remember what I wrote. What was the name of the thing I wrote about the ship? And instead of trying to go through all my files that are so badly organized, I just go to his website. But he has a link to another guy's website called Mad Streaks, a guy named Mike Slaybog, I believe it is.
Yeah.
And I looked it up. So my streak started in June 1966, and the streak is of being in every single issue. So from
Wow.
June 1966 through the issue that is already on sale, issue 8,
yeah,
I've been in 456 consecutive
amazing.
Issues.
Since 1966.
Yeah, for 53 years.
Yeah, Dick, that's almost as old as me. A few days ago, I turned 54. So that's
amazing. Oh, okay.
that's amazing.
Well, no, we're the same age. I was writing at age 1.
That's right.
Very precocious.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right.
You forgot.
Well, I mean, it was such a massive part of my life. And guys around my age, Dick, I'm right in the wheelhouse of when it really, really took off. Because I'm, like I said, I'm 54. And all that stuff, late 60s, early 70s, especially in the 70s, that's when I was really just obsessed with it. When you did some of my favorite movie parodies of all time. You did Jawed and some of the other ones, and that's when I was at the height of my insanity over Mad Magazine.
Yeah, well, the amazing thing is the outpouring of love on my website, the MAD website. People, and they all have stories like you, is that the magazine meant so much to me that, you know, you told people that the government's not always telling you the truth. That's why back then kids had to sneak MAD to the house.
Yeah.
What are you kidding? They're making fun of the government? They're making fun of car companies? That's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it was a big part of my my youth, and you know, and I've always loved MAD, and I bought a lot of the offshoot stuff, the paperback books.
Oh, great! Yeah,
and things like that, and I loved a lot of the different artists and writers and stuff like that, and you've been a part of it for forever. But there are other guys that I wanted to mention really quickly. I was a massive fan. Well, first of all, as far as artists go, I believe my favorite was Don Martin.
Don Martin, amazing. Yes,
Don Martin. He had such a distinctive visual style, and I would just, before even reading what the jokes were or whatever he wrote, I just look at the characters with the shoes that fold over. You know,
on the street corner. Yes, on the street corner. This,
and those just cracked me up. I loved Don Martin as an artist and as a writer. I also loved, and these guys are completely sort of different in style, and that was what was great about it. So many people were different. You know, the style in which they wrote, and that was one of the great things about MAD was how many different kinds of comic geniuses worked under one roof or for one magazine.
No, that's true. And then Al Jaffe, the fold in
the back cover fold in was a treat. Every issue I would go, I would save it for last. That would be the last thing I would do, would fold in the thing. And Al Jaffe also did the snappy answers to stupid questions, which I always thought was hilarious.
Oh, you know what? I don't know if there were three or four versions. He wrote paperback books that sold in the millions.
Yeah, I had them all.
And okay. They were hysterically funny things.
Yeah.
You know, the guy standing in the doorway, and he's soaking wet, and the person who just opened the door said, "Is it raining out?" and the guy says, "No, I just took a shower. Fully dressed."
Mm-hmm.
"No, there was a bucket of water over the door, and when you opened it, it spilled on me."
Right.
So it was stupid things, silly things you could say back to people who asked stupid questions.
Here's what I remember. What I remember about the paperbacks, Dick, was that he would have three or four snappy answers, and then the final bubble was blank, so that you could write in your own snappy answer.
Exactly.
I remember sitting for for hours trying to think of smart ass things to say to people so that I could fill in that little thought bubble at the bottom of each page. It was fantastic.
That's great. That's great.
So, and then of course, you know, in a completely different style, Dave Berg. Just
one, the lighter side.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And you know, so many great memories, and I don't know. It just makes me sad that it's coming to an end, and what a run. You clearly have the longest run at MAD, right?
I do. I started there in high school in 62, and then I was writing stuff on and off, and then there was some sort of emergency where they needed like a 5-page thing over the weekend, and Al said, "Can you do this?" Like, it was Friday afternoon. He said, "It has to go to press Monday." I said, "I could do that."
Yeah,
and I did. And then Gaines said, "Oh my God, this is great! What do you need from us?" I said, "I just want to be in every issue." And he says, "Write something for every issue. We would love it."
That's great.
So,
you know, you've told the story many times on the show here about how it happened, where you sent off a piece to them. And you thought it was a rejection letter, but they hired you, you know?
No. So you have to send a self-addressed stamped envelope, even to this day, although right now MAD's not accepting anything. And so I sent in a piece with the self-addressed stamped envelope. And like a month later, the big envelope came back, my own handwriting, since I addressed it. And I was so depressed, and I opened it up, And it was just cardboard in the envelope, and scribbled on the cardboard. It said, "Ha ha ha! Thought your script was rejected. Stapled to this cardboard is the check for $100." Which to me, that was like an amazing amount of money.
Absolutely,
back then.
Absolutely.
And and it was signed by Nick Meglin. And he said, "Please call me. I want to talk to you about more work."
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great story, Dick. Hang on, okay.
Yep.
All right, buddy. Dick DiBartolo is with us. Mad, unfortunately, is ceasing publication, a legendary magazine that meant a lot to so much of us, so many of us. And Dick also has some great match game stories, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And, of course, he's got the GizWiz. He is a gizmo and gadget freak. And we'll get into that more right here on 720 WGN. The news is coming up right after this. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I got to tell you, Tom, this computer's making me nuts this morning. The computer that I have right next to me here at the console here by the board, it just shut off, and now it's rebooting and configuring a Windows update. Just turned off right in the middle.
Nice.
So it was moving really slow. Someone had turned it off, and I, so I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. But anyway, it's acting weird. All right. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720. I love technology. We're back, and we're here until 5 a.m., we're in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Play them later. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to have singer-songwriter Steve Dawson join us. He's going to be coming in here after the 2 o'clock news. He's playing the Square Roots Festival this weekend in Lincoln Square. We are also going to talk about protest songs and hear a few of them and talk about the history of them and what are the best ones. And we want to hear from you as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Right now, we are talking with the great Dick DiBartolo, Mad's maddest writer, the co-host of the GizWiz at GizWiz TV, and a contributor to many great classic game shows, including some amazing stuff that he did for the classic version of Match Game. We were just talking about Mad and how Mad Magazine is going to cease publication, which is a very sad thing, but we always love having Dick on the show. Dick, welcome back.
Good to be back.
All right. Do you have favorite things that you did for Mad? And, you know, is it like reminiscing a little bit? What are some of your favorite things that you did?
The Poop Side Down adventure was a lot of fun. Recently, the Sully, you know, Sully, the movie about the captain putting the...
Yeah.
I think that's one of my favorites because I used to travel a lot, and you know, I know all about frequent flyers, and it was a way to work all that stuff in. You know, is when they're on the Hudson and they're climbing on the wing, and someone says, "Which part of the wing is first class?"
Right,
and then inside, as the plane is filling with water, one person is saying to the other, "Now watch them. Now this is another excuse. We're not going to be served lunch."
I bet it was fun to do that, just because not only just for the. You know, for the fact that you traveled a lot, you did a lot of traveling, but you're a lifetime New Yorker, so you know the Hudson River like the back of your hand.
Oh, you know, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I missed it going by the marina by seconds. I was walking in the marina, and there was someone standing there coming up the three steps, and they said, "Did you see that?" And I said, "What?" And they said, "The U.S. Air?" And I said, "Oh, the helicopters are in and out here all the time." He said, "No, a full-size jet." So I ran out to the breakwater, and I could see it downriver.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been crazy.
It was crazy, and I was walking to my boat, and the dock master said, "Hey, don't take your boat out because all marinas are getting notices. Please keep small pleasure boats out of the way of big boats that are going out there to pick up passengers."
Wow, that's crazy. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, see, but then, you know, you had like personal experience then to write that.
Absolutely.
I think some of my favorite things. I mean, I keep mentioning Jawed because, I mean, you know, people who might be too young to remember just the how big an impact Jaws made when it was released. I mean, it was, as you know, Dick, it was craziness when that movie was released.
Absolutely. And the Poseidon Adventure, too.
Yeah.
The only reason is I have a poster right here on my wall. Ah. The Poseidon Adventure cover, you know, it's Alfred in a life ring, except Alfred's feet are out and his head is underwater. yeah, I know. That sold almost 2.5 million copies.
Mm.
That was the largest selling Mad in history. So,
wow, that's great. Yeah. And to have been part of that must have been really special. How much like the episode of The Simpsons was it like in The Office? You remember?
It was way crazy when Gaines was around.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Anything, you know, Gaines, he was one day he filled the water cooler with white wine. he would just be nutty. And then when he died, the people from Time Warner came over and said, oh, this place looks like a high school newspaper, which it did and which we loved.
Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, Bill put a wall between you and the corporate world, and he's dead, and the wall's coming down. It was a very depressing kind of meeting.
Yeah.
So it was certainly more lighthearted and fun, I'm sure, than an insurance company office.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the insanity of when Bill was there.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I got to, you know, I got, as soon as the news broke, Dick, earlier this week, you know, the first thing I did was I contacted my producer Tom, and I was like, "We got to get Dick DiBartolo on to talk about Mad." It's always a pleasure to talk to you, but I'm feeling melancholy about the whole thing.
No, I totally understand. I totally understand. I mean, the hard thing is going to be when the final issue comes out, and to think I'm not going to be crazy like that anymore.
Yeah. Well,
I'll just throw stuff up online, I guess.
Yeah, well, sure. But it's a hell of a run, though, Dick.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess not many people have been able to do something for 60 or whatever it is, 50. My brain is going, do something for 53 years in a row, I guess.
53 years, yeah. That's incredible. It is incredible. And at what period of time did you start working on the game shows? How long? Because the game shows, a lot of people don't, you know, remember that when the game shows and the panel shows first started, they were all out of New York. All of them were out of New York. And they were populated by, like, sort of New York actors or Broadway people or writers, columnists, things like that.
That is exactly right. And I was hired to write Match Game, which back then was the questions had no blanks in them. They were name a red flower, name something you do with an egg, name an animal that has babies not with an egg.
Mm.
And then 10 months in, it got canceled, and I was depressed about that.
Yeah.
And then over the weekend, I thought, and Monday I went back and I said, you know, Mark, I work for Mad. And he said, I know. I said, well, you know, these questions, when you look at it, are really deadly, and we should be doing sillier things. He said, like what? I said, like, and this is the first thing I ever wrote, Mary liked to pour gravy on John's blank. And you know, he laughed and he said, what will they say? I said, Mark, they're going to laugh and then they'll say meatloaf or potatoes.
Yeah.
But that's fine. And he said, listen, it's canceled. Do what you want.
Yeah.
So I started writing that and then I got 18 years of employment bouncing from show to show.
And I have to say, Dick, I still watch the classics from the 70s. I still watch them.
Me too.
And I just laugh every time. And, you know. Brett and Charles Nelson Reilly and Richard Dawson before he got Family Feud and became a jerk on the show.
yeah.
Cause you could spot pre Family Feud Dawson from post Family Feud Dawson.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so could Ira Scutch, who was the producer back there. And, you know, one day he said to Richard, you know, I can get you off this show if you want. Mm-hmm. And so that ended it for Richard.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, but you know, and I still watch the reruns and I can't stand the new version. We talked about this before, Dick. The new version, there's no double entendre. They're working blue.
No.
They're working blue.
Absolutely. Yeah. The fun thing about the Match Game is what you were thinking and what you knew they were thinking, and then put something silly on the card.
Right.
But I watched two episodes of the new one, and I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Saying this on a network show?
Yeah, I know. And, you know, that's the other thing, Dick, if you've noticed, all of the old game shows are back now. I mean, they're bringing everything back. To Tell the Truth is back. Pressure Luck is back. Card Sharks is back, and because they're cheap to produce, and you know they can just tape them all in one day, and then they just show them during the summer, and they make money on them.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Who knew?
Yeah.
I mean, who knew that the terrible thing was once a month we would get a big sheet on the desk and it would say, if you have any friends on the following shows, Match Game, What's My Line, To Tell the Truth, please go to the tape library and save that tape because on June 30th, we're going to erase 500 tapes from these shows.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know, because tape back then was very expensive.
Yeah.
And they had you know, rooms full of cassettes because no one dreamed anybody would want to see these again.
Yeah. Wow, that's terrible. That really is. I love watching the old black and white panel shows too. Those are just great. And I would rather
What's My Line.
Oh, I love that. Yep. I love the old What's My Line. I love John Daly. I just think John Daly was magnificent at his job, and you know, like all the old panel people that were always on there, you know, you get your Bennett Cerf and all those people and
Kitty Carlisle,
Arlene Francis, Peggy Cass,
just
great stuff, man, great stuff, and it still lives on. I love the fact that like there's networks like Buzzer and the Game Show Network. That dedicate a lot of airtime to the older game shows, and Match Game is on all the time. The 70s Match Game is on all the time.
And no, it's great.
Yeah.
Mainly Buzzer these days is doing a lot with Match Game.
They do a lot with Match Game. Okay, Dick, hang on. Okay.
Okay.
Because when
good.
We come back, we're going to talk about some of the gadgets and some of the gizmos that you love. Talk a little bit about that,
okay.
And also you did a video. Celebrating the Walkman's 40th anniversary, and I do want to talk about that.
Okay, too. Very good, yeah.
Okay, Dick, hang on. Dick DiBartolo, one of the greatest, who has written for Mad Magazine, at 53 years straight. He's been a part of every single issue since 1966, which is unbelievable. Mad Magazine is ceasing publication. Two more issues left. And we just wanted to talk with Dick about his experience with the great Mad Magazine and Match Game. And when we come back, we're going to talk gadgets and gizmos with him right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. After the 2 o'clock news, a really terrific singer-songwriter named Steve Dawson is going to join us. He's playing the Square Roots Festival over the weekend in Lincoln Square. He's been in the business here for a long time, and we've had him on the show before. He's a great guy, and we're going to hear some live music in studio. He's going to play some music for us right here in studio. Also coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All right, let's get back to our conversation with the great Dick DiBartolo. We were talking about Mad Magazine and his years working there and the people that he worked with. And Mad Magazine's going to cease to be no more publications. And we're sad about that. And we were just talking a little bit about his work with game shows. And now let's get back to some of the stuff that he's working on. Now, Dick, welcome back, sir.
Very good. So don't forget, Mad with new material is ending, but old traditional Mad with reprints will continue printing.
Okay.
And that'll go to subscribers and be available in comic book stores, not on newsstands.
Okay. All right. So at least we can get the classic stuff. We'll be able to go out and get
some exactly.
Of the classic stuff.
My guess is that they'll look like the old Mad specials. Like they'll do a Star Wars issue and get all the stuff all of us wrote about Star Wars,
right.
And maybe do a sports special with all the sporting articles.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah, so that'll live on.
Outstanding. Okay, so the Gizwiz. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Gizwiz is my co-host Chad Johnson, OMG Chad, a big YouTuber with Minecraft. I think he has 5 million, 3 million subscribers to his Minecraft show. We do a show about gadgets, and we try to find gadgets that you probably don't know about, both silly. For example, at a recent show, we saw it's called the Town New Trash Automatic Trash Bin. And what it does is you fill it with trash, and then when there's enough trash in there that you want to take it out, you push the button on the front. The lid closes. It seals the plastic bag. It opens. Now it's sealed. So if there was any liquid in there or any cat litter, dirty cat litter, whatever it is, it's in a sealed bag. And then the lid closes again, and it puts another bag out all ready to collect more trash. So that was very unique, and we try and find unique stuff and silly things. You know, I bought, you know, it was always an old joke, and then I thought, you know, I wonder if anybody ever made mop shoes. You know, there's always old cartoons
of
people that would put and yes, there are mop shoes. They're like heavy duty mops built into heavy duty socks. And you put them on over your shoes, and I walked all through my apartment, slid, actually, dancing.
Yeah.
I did a pretty good clean-up job. So mop shoes are a thing, and they work.
Wow. Okay. That's great. So that's the kind of things you guys look for. And you do some you still do appearances on ABC World News now?
I do. And on the last show, this is my new favorite kind of amazing fun device. It's called Bunch of Balloons Party Pack.
Uh-huh.
Now, you may remember their last gadget was 100 water balloons you could blow up in 30 seconds by screwing this thing onto the end of a hose, and it would fill these water balloons, and they would pop off with the rubber band already in place. Well, now they came up with party balloons that you stick in this inflator. You can stick up to 40 stems into this machine. It blows them up in 40 seconds, and when they come off the machine, they're already sealed, and they have a ribbon on them. So if you're having a birthday party or something, here is an easy way to make party balloons.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
That's
it's really great. And the machine and 18 balloons is like $18.
Wow.
And then you can just buy more balloons to stick into it. I thought that was so clever.
That is clever. That really sounds very, very cool. Now, you recently did a thing about the Walkman's 40th anniversary. We talked about gadgets, you know, we talked about gadgets that were really popular and considered high tech back in the 70s and 80s. And to go back and look at those things is really funny. What? Tell me the gist of the Walkman thing you did.
Well, the thing is that I own one of them.
Yeah.
So it's the 50th. Is it the 50th anniversary?
40th.
Oh, I can't even remember.
It's the 40th. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then, on my website, there's a link to Sony did a great video of all the music plays they've made in the past 40 years with many, many failed formats, you know, like the memory stick. And I was sitting next to a guy in the airplane. He had these headphones and this little thing. And I said, can I ask what that is? And he said, well, before I tell you, here, listen to the music. I was blown away. And he said, it's called the Sony Walkman. I said, I'm going to buy one when we land. He said, well, no, I'm a pilot. And I'm deadheading back from Japan. I bought it in Japan.
Oh, wow, that early, wow.
Yes, and he said it's called the Walkman. It took months before it hit New York at I believe, $230.
Jeez.
And I was able to buy it at a place called 47th Street Photo for just $180. But it's all metal. It has separate volume controls for each channel. It has two headphone jacks. And then something very weird, a microphone on the front and a hot button on the top. Now, it couldn't record, but the hot button and the mic was so you could communicate with the person wearing the other pair of headphones.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Or if someone was walking by and asked you a question, you didn't have to take your headphones off. You just hold the microphone up and hold the hot button, and they would be talking to you into your headset. That's pretty amazing, isn't it?
That's pretty crazy. That is pretty crazy. You know what I love? I don't know if I'm sure you've seen these online, Dick. These videos of little kids, and they give them a Walkman and don't explain what it is.
Yes.
You know, these are kids who even like are post iPod. You know, and they're trying to figure out what is this? What's a cassette?
Well, you know, Polaroid is reintroducing the one step. Mm-hmm. And a couple of years ago, I forgot what they were introducing. And I said, who buys these things?
Yeah.
And they said, young kids, teenagers, they never saw a Polaroid.
Yeah.
And they think this is great.
Yeah.
They think that what I, the picture comes right out. It's like the printer is there. I don't have to go to use Wi-Fi. Yeah. So
that's amazing. So Dick, what are you working on next?
Let's see. I'm doing an ABC spot this weekend, which will air next week. It's kind of fun. It's called Tech Under $10, things you could find for $10 and under.
Okay.
And then I'm continuing doing my show. And then I'm on with Leo Laporte every Saturday on This Week in Tech, where I pick my favorite gadget of the week and talk about that.
Great.
So I still have stuff going on.
Right.
Not unlike yourself. You do the radio.
Yeah.
You have the jars and the jars of jelly. I'm still driving to that thing.
That's right.
Yeah. And if you finish knitting those pot holders, it would be great. I'd like to get my hands on them.
I'll mail them out to you as soon as I can.
Okay.
All right, Dick.
And
always
put the mustache on this time.
Always, okay. I will. I will do that. Always a pleasure. And we still have two new issues of Mad, and the old stuff will be available as well. We'll get you back on pretty soon. Okay, Dick.
Okay. Very good.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Okay. Take care. Okay. Bye.
Dick DiBartolo, the best, and we had to have him on to talk about the demise of Mad Magazine, which makes me sad. Okay, we got a break here for the news, and then after the news, Steve Dawson is going to join us. He's in the PPG Paints room, green room, and we'll get him in here and hear some live music and talk music with him.
First we bend your legs backwards at the knees. Then we punch some holes in your chest. Often we find that is all.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are going to be talking about protest songs. Yesterday was the anniversary of the day that Bob Dylan wrote "Blowing in the Wind." So we're going to do a little protest song conversation. And we didn't get to the freak out movies yesterday. We'll do that. And of course, we're going to play a round of Know Your Onion. That's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is a singer-songwriter and author who is live in studio here, and you just heard his music. His name is Steve Dawson. He's been in Chicago here for a long time and has played in – how many bands have you actually played in or been a part of?
Well, officially, I guess – four.
Yeah.
But Dolly Varden is the main one that people would recognize.
Yeah, Dolly Varden. You've not been in this studio. You've been in the studio across the river.
Yes.
They set this one up pretty much exactly like the one on the seventh floor.
Very similar.
Yeah, except that there used to be a bathroom right there at the other one. So how you been?
Good, really good.
It's good to see you. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Too. Thank you.
So you're playing the Square Roots Festival.
Yes.
And that's this weekend in beautiful Lincoln Square.
That's right. So I have a band called Funeral Bonsai Wedding, which is with this guy, this vibraphone player named Jason Adashevitz, who's like an award-winning jazz vibraphone guy, and a bass player named Jason Rebke, and a drummer named Charles Rumbeck, who are all sort of members of the sort of experimental jazz world of Chicago. And I get them to play kind of folk songs, but it ends up being a little sideways. And then for this, we just made a new record that has a string quartet, the Quartet Parapluie string quartet. So it's this big, lush, wondrous thing. And that's happening Sunday at the Square Roots Festival, Sunday evening.
And that's at 6:45.
Yes.
Yeah, awesome. That's fantastic. And it's in Lincoln Square, which is on Lincoln Avenue between Montrose and Wilson, right there in the center of Lincoln Square. How long has the Square Roots Festival been around?
I guess maybe 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, it's relatively new.
It used to be Folk and Roots. They used to take over the whole park there and made a giant stage. And they sort of pared it down a little bit. And it's become a really cool thing. At first, people were disappointed because, you know, it was this big deal. The Folk and Roots Festival was a big deal. And then it became just a couple blocks on Lincoln Avenue. But it's become really nice, and people have come to really like it. The music is always great. The food is great. And it's I don't know, it just feels really neighborhoody. There's lots of kids, lots of stuff for kids to do.
Right.
And, you don't have, you know, you don't have drunks stumbling around and stuff. It's really a nice festival.
Make sure you hydrate.
Yes.
It's going to be very hot this weekend.
Yeah.
I just saw the weather. It's supposed to be really hot.
Well, we're inside, which
I'm you're
really
inside.
Happy.
Good, good, good.
We're in the big concert hall.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, which I'm super excited about because that's a beautiful room.
Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, then don't worry about it.
Well, I mean, I'll hydrate anyway.
Yeah, you gotta hydrate anyway. Yeah, but I thought you guys were gonna be outside. That would have been. Look at this. My phone just popped on, and Google asked me, "Why would they ask me about welding?" What did I say? Did I say anything that sounded like welding?
Wilson? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, I don't know why my phone. I have my phone on vibrate, and all of a sudden the Google came on and said, "I found all the things about information about welding."
Maybe
I don't know.
It knows something you don't know.
This is why I'm terrified of AI.
Right.
This is why I don't have an Alexa in my house.
Yeah.
Let's get into your background. By the way, your website is stevedawsonmusic.com.
It's true.
Okay. Where are you from originally?
Originally from Southern California, from San Diego. I lived there as a kid, and then we moved up. My dad moved us up to Idaho, into the mountains of Idaho, when I was 12. So we lived up there, and then I went to college in Boston and came here after college because my friend Nicholas Barron, who I think you know, Nicholas.
Yeah, I do, absolutely.
He was living here. I knew him from Boston, and he said Chicago's great for playing music.
Yeah. And you've been
affordable.
Here ever
since? Yeah, and I've stayed ever since.
How long you been here?
Like 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did you start playing music? When did you start playing guitar?
Oh, when I was, as soon as we moved to Idaho, I learned how to play guitar. It was offered in school there.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was great. There was a woman named Linda Terry who I credit her with basically, I credit her or blame her for the setting me on this path. But she was a like a fiddle champion who also taught guitar in the public schools. And she was kind of this hippie lady that loved John Denver so much.
Oh,
and
boy.
It was just infectious, you know. I just, like, she would, like, say, like, "We're going to learn Sunshine on My Shoulders, you guys, and we're going to really feel what he's talking about." And just, like, it was, like, it just seemed like the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That enthusiasm, you know, that's, you know, you get, that catches, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what about family-wise? What were you listening to with the family?
My dad is a huge music fan. He loved jazz. He loved classic rock stuff like the Stones and Neil Young.
Yeah.
And, my stepmom had a lot of the kind of 70s songwriter people like James Taylor and Paul Simon and
Cat Stevens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So a lot of that. Lot of that. And there was one radio station up in Idaho that played just the country music of the day. But the 70s country was pretty good.
Yeah.
So
it's certainly better than it is now.
Yeah.
But then you ended up in Boston, going to school in Boston.
Yes.
What brought you here? Why did you choose Chicago?
Well, mostly from Nicholas.
Oh, from Nicholas, right.
Mostly his recommendation, because I couldn't afford to live in Boston. It was really expensive, and there's not a lot of gigs to be had there. It's a smaller city, and there's a lot of musicians, and it's expensive. So I was doing the numbers, and just there was no way I was going to be able to survive there. So Nicholas said, "It's affordable here. There's lots of places to play."
Yeah.
And it's true.
And you're still playing.
It's true.
And what are some of your favorite places to play?
Old Town School is one.
Oh, that place is amazing.
Fitzgerald's is one, and Space up in Evanston.
Yeah.
Those are basically the ones we really like to play now.
Yeah. Some of the other rooms that I like are Lincoln Hall and Shuba's are two great rooms. Lincoln Hall acoustically is insane.
Yeah.
It's just so
it's beautiful.
Well, they did such a beautiful job with that. But Old Town School Folk is just a really special place.
It is.
I've had many, many musicians in here who have passed through those doors. And I have Lindsey Cochran on from Great Moments in Vinyl on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And he has brought in some of these great musicians that he gets from the Old Town School of Folk. It's a really special place. What's your association with that place?
No, I'm a teacher there. I teach songwriting there, and I teach guitar classes there. I've been doing that for, gosh, over 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really incredible how many insanely talented musicians have walked through those doors or associated with it. Would you agree with that?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Mm. And a lot of them are kind of stealth. You know, you wouldn't even know that this guy who's teaching guitar too is this, you know, monstrous guitar player.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
a real special place, and it's a great place to see a show. I want to say the last time I was been a while. Last time I was there was Amy Mann. Mm-hmm. It was when Amy Mann played, and it's such a great room. And here's one of the things that I loved about it. I mean, I've always loved the place. The one thing that I loved about that particular night was it was a few years ago, and not one single person was holding up a phone.
Right.
And videoing it. Not one. And I think that's because Amy Mann, it's like, okay, Amy Mann. There's only three people on stage. And two, I think it's because of the venue.
I think so too, because I've gone to a lot of shows at Old Town. I've gotten used to that. And then I'll go to a show where everyone's looking on their phones, and it's really
it's annoying.
Yeah.
I don't understand it. There's like a live show going on in front of you.
Right.
Why don't you watch that instead
really
of looking
strange.
Through your phone?
Yeah.
I know you want to tell people that you're there. That I understand.
I can see
that.
Taking,
I
mean,
a quick picture.
We saw Aretha Franklin when she played down at the Chicago Theater. That was like, you know, and then she died pretty shortly thereafter. So I had to take a picture of that.
Yeah.
But it's not like I wasn't I just had to take a snapshot.
It was the thing about it is, you know, I've done that. I've done the snapshot thing.
Yeah.
But but the thing about it is, it's like if you go to a big show now at all, or if you go to a medium show now, everybody's got their phone up. It's the sea of phones just held up. I'm friends with a lot of people on Facebook who see a lot of Dave Matthews shows.
Okay.
And Dave's playing this summer. He played at Alpine Valley. He played in Tinley Park last week. He's in Detroit. He was in Detroit tonight, outside of Detroit tonight. And I have old friends from there.
Okay.
And they were guilty of it. They posted on their Facebook page like an entire, like not an entire song. If it's a Dave song, it's 22 minutes, 22 minutes long. But they posted that stuff up. I just don't get it. But that was really something that I noticed, you know, while I was at Old Town. Yeah. There's a respect, you know what I mean? To the venue, to the place, to the music.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I love it there.
So your new album, tell me a little bit about it.
So this Funeral Bonsai Wedding Group made a record in 2014 as a quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was super fun and cool, and we played some shows around that, and it got good reviews. And the drummer moved to Holland.
Right.
So I thought, I don't know if that's going to be happening anymore. But then I did a residency at the Hideout. Oh, I should have mentioned that.
Oh, that's a great place, yeah.
I did a series of Mondays at the Hideout in 2017, and I knew Melissa Bach, who's a cellist, and I knew her group. I had seen them play with other people, so I thought, well, for one of these, I want to have Melissa's string quartet, the Quartet Parapluie, come and play with me. So then I had the idea of, let's do it with Funeral Bonsai Wedding, and I asked Jason Rebke, the bass player, if he could do the string arrangements, and he did. And they're stunning. They're ridiculously stunning. And even the women in the string quartet are kind of stunned by how good they are. So it's once we did that gig at the Hideout, I was like, okay, we need to record this.
Yeah.
So he did a couple more arrangements, and then we went in the studio this past spring and just recorded everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And does it have an official release?
Not yet. It's being mixed, and I got to master it.
Okay.
And then it'll be pressed. So hopefully by the end of the year, hopefully.
By the end of the year. Yeah. Get that out there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right. Well, we're going to take a break real quick.
Okay.
And when we come back, Steve Dawson, you're going to play a song?
Yeah.
Live in studio. We'll hear that. We'll talk a little bit more. And that'll be more coming up right here, right after we take a break on 720 WGN.
All those words have crashed back down like handfuls of stones. They are all forgiven now. Forgiven, forgiven. They are
right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday coming up. Get your request in now. And that is any song, any artist, anything, 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. The Square Roots Festival is happening this weekend, the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th of July, right in the heart of Lincoln Square, squareroots.org. There's going to be tons of food. There's going to be beer. There's going to be market vendors. And there's going to be a lot of music. And part of that music is my guest this morning. And it's Steve Dawson, who is a singer and songwriter. SteveDawsonMusic.com is the website. And you're playing at 6:45 on Sunday, July 14th.
That's all true.
Yes. Okay. Before we get to hear the song and get into some of the other things, tell everybody about Dolly Varden.
So Dolly Varden is my wife and I, my wife Diane Christensen.
Right.
We started out singing together as soon as I moved to Chicago. So this goes back to the late 80s. And we were in a band called Stump the Host for about 5 years. That was more of a twangy kind of cow punk band, I guess that's what they called us. And then that band broke up and Diane and I were married and had a kid, and we wanted to keep playing music together, so we started another band that was a little more, I don't know, mellow or more slightly more pop, more mainstream, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And we got a guitar player named Mark Belletto, who had been a friend of ours. We auditioned drummers and got a guy named Matt Toby, who was great, and we stole our bass player from another friend's band.
That happens.
Yeah.
That happens.
Mike Bradburn is the bass player, and we've just been around, sort of kicking around for a long time, since the middle 90s.
Right.
We had a good run of success between, like, 2000 and 2004. We had some records that did really well over in England, and we toured over the UK and Western Europe quite a few times during those years, and that was really fun. And we toured the States and did well here, too, but we had a lot of success in England.
Yeah. Well, you guys are great.
Thank you.
She's got a wonderful voice, and you guys sound fantastic together, and it's always great to hear you. You might start working together, because you've been working on this project, so you might want to get back together with your wife and do some other stuff.
Yeah, we'll do another record for sure. Probably next year would be my guess, because this thing's going to take up probably the rest of this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to play, you brought your guitar.
Yeah.
You're going to play a song?
Song I've been working on.
Okay.
It's a new song. It's not released.
All right.
All right.
As far back as I can remember, there were no answers in your eyes. Through summer assaults of surrender, I only now recognize that the sycamores and eagles on the tip of your pen were more real than the house we were living in. The ghost in your bed that would never come clean, your old man in the bleachers screaming. Oh, forgiveness is nothing like I thought it would be. Strange peace in the valley where the rage used to feed. I can wish you well out on your island in the sea. And I release you, I release, I release you. God damn these reverberations that shake loose the will. Flipping through the radio stations, I see now at the wheel, watching the signs for the way to get through. As the fire raged, I ran away with you. 900 miles down a highway from the truth, never realizing all the damage it would do. Oh, forgiveness is nothing like I thought it would be. There's no choir of angels, no sunrise epiphany, but I can wish you well out on your island in the sea. And I release you, I release, I release you, I release, I release.
That was great, man.
Thank you.
That was really beautiful. That was Thanks. Really beautiful. What's your writing process like?
I'll sit around with the guitar and just strum some things and see what I come up with, and hopefully words pop out.
Yeah.
At the same time, I keep a stockpile of sort of like phrases or ideas that might be worth pursuing.
Where did that one come from?
I guess just a thought that forgiveness isn't this big overwhelming thing. It's a slow process.
Yeah.
So it was just more of a thought maybe that was jotted down in a notebook.
Yeah. And yeah. do you have stuff that, I mean, that you're working on that evolves? That stuff,
yes.
Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, yeah. And we have a songwriting group with friends that get together once a month. And the only rule is you have to have something new every time. So it's great to have a deadline.
Yeah.
That helps a lot.
Yeah. Do you like the recording process as well?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love recording. I have a studio at home, and I'm out there as often as I can be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I record other people. I produce other people's records, and I love doing that. I love it.
Yeah. And so the Square Roots show that's happening on Sunday, and that's going to be with the strings?
Yes, and with string quartet and the vibraphone player and the bass, with Funeral Bonsai Wedding, that whole thing, and the string quartet.
Where did the name come from?
It was a florist on Clark and Division. I used to take the bus when I first moved here. I had three windows: funeral, bonsai, and wedding. I passed it almost every day, and I thought that would be a cool name for a band.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, but I like it.
No, it's great. I love the story's great, too. You know, I mean, you're passing these three windows every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's really good. You like playing out, too, right?
I love it. Yeah, I love playing live. Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about the teaching that you do.
I teach both sort of like beginning songwriting, which I really like, and I teach a class called continuing songwriting, which a lot of people take over and over again, which is similar to what I was just talking about in that it's a deadline. So I give an assignment, which is sometimes a lyric prompt or sometimes a form or chords or an idea or a concept, any real little thing. Tonight I just came from there.
Yeah.
And this week's assignment is a list of words. So just sort of random words that I came up with. And then they're supposed to use five of them in their song.
I see.
So I've been doing that for a long time, and boy, the songs people write are really great.
Is that?
Really great. Yeah, it's really inspiring. And
Well, yeah. Speaking of songs that are inside you, our good friend Mark Caro, who's worked for the Trib and a big friend, yep. Good friend of the show. I've known him for years. He's been on many times. You guys put together a book called "Take It to the Bridge: Unlocking the Great Songs Inside You."
Yes.
Tell everybody about that book.
Well, so that's based on this class I was describing, right. Where I give a weekly assignment, and people over the years were saying, "Well, you should compile the best of these assignments into a book." And I thought, well, that's maybe a good idea, but I don't have any idea how to go about making a book. But I was friends with Mark Caro, and it dawned on me that he made a book.
Yes, he did.
So I said, I wonder if you would be interested in helping me do this project. And he came up with the idea of having it be a dialogue where we sort of, he asked a question and I would respond, and that would bring up other things for him to respond to. And it was a back and forth. So that's a big part of the book, and then the back half is just the assignments.
Right.
And
right. I've got a copy of it. It's really terrific.
Yeah.
It's really great. It's out there. It's still available.
Right? Oh yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Get out there and get it. Again, it's called "Take It to the Bridge," the Unlocking the Great Songs Inside You, written with Mark Caro. So there you go. Square Roots Festival is this weekend, and it's at 44 to 4560 North Lincoln Avenue. That's on Lincoln between Montrose and Wilson. There's a suggested donation of $10 for adults, $5 for seniors and kids. There's going to be a ton of food, there's a ton of beer, and a ton of music.
Yeah, there's great music all up and down the street. There's two outdoor stages, and then this inside stage, and Sun Volt is playing later that night. They're mm-hmm. a great band.
Yeah, terrific band.
Yeah, so a lot of cool stuff going on.
And, you can check out squareroots.org if you're looking for, a schedule and all that other stuff and more details. Lincoln Square is a really, really wonderful neighborhood, a really great place. And it has evolved over the years. Yeah. I grew up right around there. Spent a significant amount of time in my drinking years at Ricochet's on the corner there. Squareroots.org for more information on that, and stevedawsonmusic.com for more information on Steve Dawson. I believe I probably asked you this question, but every time I have a musician in, I ask two regular questions, and that is, what was the first album that you ever bought?
The first album, well, last time I was here, you asked me this, and I said that I didn't buy it. My mom bought it for me, but the Queen, A Night at the Opera, was on a rack by the checkout counter at the grocery store.
Yeah, which is so weird.
Yeah.
But that,
and I knew Bohemian Rhapsody from the radio, so I begged my mom to buy it.
Yeah.
The first record that I think my dad, we were at a Tower Records in San Diego, and my dad gave me money and said, buy whatever you want. I bought Paul Simon, There Goes Ryman Simon.
Oh, wow.
I think because I loved, maybe he'd been on The Muppet Show or something.
Yeah,
I can't
remember
why. But I loved Loves Me Like a Rock, and that was on there, so I bought that record.
There you go.
Which it turns out that was a great record.
It is a terrific record, yeah. All right, and then first concert.
It was a double bill of Chicago and Santana.
Wow.
Yeah. In Balboa Stadium in San Diego.
Wow.
Probably in like 73 or 74.
Oh, wow. So like good Santana and good Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay. at some point there had to be 43 people on stage between the two bands.
Yeah. I just remember I'd never been to anything like that. It was an outdoor concert, and it was 73, so there was just the spectacle of it was really something for a little kid.
Yeah. Well, listen, Steve, it was a pleasure to have you on, man.
Thanks.
And everybody can see you on at the Square Roots
Festival.
Yeah,
please come. It's going to be really
on
good.
July 14th in Lincoln Square. So there you go. Great to have you on. Always fun to talk
so much.
To you. And it was a beautiful song that you played for us.
Thank you.
Okay, Steve Dawson, everybody. We'll take a break. And we will come back with the news after this on WGN.
The world's your oyster, man, but oysters ain't for me. You're the belle of the ball, but you ain't my cup of tea. They always vote you best in show, but this doggy disagrees. 'Cause I like life in Paddy's Pub.
Okay.
There's a place for me. It's the place I go where the beer is cheap and the lights are low. It's Paddy's Pub.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. So, who requested that?
That's coming to us from John.
From John.
Yeah, John S.
Okay. Clearly a fan of It's Always Sunny.
One of the best episodes of It's Always Sunny.
Yeah.
If I do say so myself.
So, any artist, any song, anything, there you go. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We are here till 5 a.m. A little bit later on, we are going to pay tribute and listen to some audio from some of the work that the great Rip Torn did. He passed away yesterday at the age of 88 and was a tremendous actor, a great actor, great on stage, great in movies, and obviously great on television, as evidenced by the Larry Sanders Show. He was one of my favorites, and so we're going to pay tribute to him. He had a remarkable career, and we'll talk about that and hear some of the audio from some of the great stuff that he did. Also, we'll have another round of Know Your Onion. Tom will be your host. The idea here is that Tom will read you some news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they are real or whether they are from the satirical comedy fake news newspaper, The Onion. So he'll read, and because actual real news right now is so weird and crazy that some real headlines sound exactly like they should be coming from The Onion. That's how crazy it is right now. So that's the idea. Know Your Onion. And if you do know your onion, and you can tell the difference between a real headline and an onion headline, you'll win. But everybody's a winner. That's how it works. So we take two separate contestants, and one person plays until they win or lose, and then we bring the next person on, and they play until they win or lose, and that happens right after the 4:30 news. So know your onion. Get ready for that. 312-981-7200. All right. So yesterday, on this day, Bob Dylan recorded Blowin' in the Wind, which is considered one of the greatest protest songs of all time. And it was a pretty, you know, it was a pretty remarkable moment and in the music world. So this here ain't no protest song or anything like that, because I don't write no protest songs. That's how Bob Dylan introduced one of the most eloquent protest songs ever written when he first performed it publicly. It was the spring of his first full year in New York City, and he was on stage at Gertie's Folk City in Greenwich Village talking about a song he claimed to have written in just 10 minutes. That would be Blowin' in the Wind. A few weeks later, marking back there, in 1962, Dylan walked into a studio and recorded the song that would make him a star. Dylan's recording of Blowin' in the Wind would be first released nearly a full year later on his breakthrough album, The Freewheelin' Bob Dylan. This was not the version of the song that most people would first hear, however. That honor went to the cover version by Peter, Paul, and Mary, a version that not only became a smash hit on the pop charts, but also transformed what Dylan would later call just another song, quote-unquote, into the unofficial anthem of the civil rights movement. Blowin' in the Wind bore little or no resemblance to the highly topical, highly literate protest songs of the day, but that may have been precisely what made it so effective as a protest song. And it is one of the quintessential protest songs of all time. So what we're doing here is we're going to talk about the best protest songs of all time and hear some of them and talk about some of the stories behind them. PasteMagazine.com, which is a terrific website, by the way, that has a staff of really knowledgeable and really good writers. They put together the 50 best protest songs of all time. And so we want to hear what your thoughts on this. That's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. Your favorite protest songs. What do you think are the best protest songs of all time? And the thing about a protest song is it can be any genre. You could write a protest song about any in any style. It doesn't have to be a folk song. Immediately people think, you know, protest song, folk song, but that's not the case. There are protest songs in every single genre that I can think of. But Paste Magazine, they did a little survey of their staff, their writers, the people that contribute, and they put together a list of the 50 best protest songs of all time. So we want to hear from you. What do you think are the best protest songs ever? The most effective, the most classic? You can talk or text us right now at 312-981-7200 with your choices. The intro for the article that I'm holding says, it's been said that music can change the world. Some might denounce that as an exaggeration, but at minimum, music does have the power to stir emotions and bring attention to worthy causes. And over the decades, protest songs have led the way, offering a powerful and passionate testimony to those suffering while urging listeners to lend support and solidarity in response. So that's essentially the setup here. And they chose 50 songs, the people over at Paste Magazine. By the way, if you want to read the whole article, you know, this is why you should like our Facebook page, because everything we're talking about on the show is also posted up on our Facebook page. So if you want to read this stuff and take a look at it, it's there right now, and it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. So the first one that they have here listed is Green Day, American Idiot. And this writer, and again, it's from different writers. They chose you know, a bunch of people who are contributors and the staff at Paste Magazine. So they say the title track of their 2004 album American. Wow, is that 2004? Has it been that long? Jeez, 15 years that album came out. Wow. The 2004 album American Idiot ushered Green Day into the 21st century with the pop punk snark of their youth, with the anger of the Bush era. The album opens, "Don't Want to Be an American Idiot, Don't Want a Nation Under the New Media," and "Can You Hear the Sound of Hysteria?" is a subliminal mind blank America, a direct response to the nation's deteriorating international perception and its internal hysteria in response to 9/11. And American Idiot looked inward and outward simultaneously and cemented Green Day's legacy in the history of punk. Yeah, I really like American Idiot. I think American Idiot is a pretty terrific record. There's a lot of great songs on that. I remember when it came out, I was hanging out. I was hanging out in Simon's, a bar in Andersonville, and it was on the jukebox, and it was played constantly. Not just the song American Idiot, but like everything. That was a double album, you know. So there was a lot of music on that record. It's just that we, you know, people at Simon's had a tendency to, you know, if the people in the bar liked something, they would play it a lot. And a lot, like over and over and over a lot. And the people of the bar, the majority of the people who hung out at that bar on a regular basis took a real liking to that record. And I just got sick of it because somebody would play it. There would be at least 1, 2, 3, 4 tracks played every night that I was there from American Idiot for however long it was on the jukebox in the early mid 2000s. But I do like it. I like the whole album and the song, you know, and it did catapult these guys. They went from, I mean, they were big. They had a very big following, and they had lots of successful singles and records and stuff, but American Idiot was probably the most challenging and the most complex thing that they had done up until that point. Concept album, making a statement, all of that stuff. So a really terrific, terrific record. So how about this one? Bright Eyes, When the President Talks to God. Originally released as a digital download in 2005 and later released as the B-side to The First Day of My Life. This Bright Eyes song encapsulated an anti-Bush sentiment when the commander-in-chief was invading countries that didn't have anything to do with the attacks on September 11th and allowing domestic issues like poor education funding and drug addiction to run rampant. So that's what that song is about. I don't know if I know that one.
I mean, it was pretty popular during the Bush era. Yeah, I mean, amongst, like, I don't know, indie kids.
Yeah.
Because Bright Eyes is one of those bands.
Right.
Very particular subset.
I know. I mean, I know the band. I just don't, I probably wouldn't, I don't know the song by title. I may know it if I heard it. But by the way, we're going to play some of these on the air. Some of these we got to be careful about. Because a lot of the protest songs that are on here, you know, are pretty the feelings are very kind of raw and uncensored. So we just have to be careful about some of them.
Yeah, I've got the Bright Eyes song if you want to take.
Yeah, let's
take a listen here.
Let's listen to this. If I know it.
God, are the conversations brief or long? Does he ask to rape our women's rights and send poor farm kids off to die? Does God suggest an oil hike when the president talks to God? When the president talks to God, are the consonants all hard or soft? Is he resolute up down the line? Is every issue black or white? Does what God say ever change his mind when the president talks to God?
Okay.
Very Bob Dylan.
I don't know that song.
No.
I do not know that song. Sounds cool, though.
Yeah, it's a good track, but it's very much Conor Oberst, like, okay, I'm going to write a Bob Dylan style.
Yeah.
But very, very angry. Like,
well, yeah.
You can tell he's very passionate about it.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that song. It sounds good, though. All right. Why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back. 312-981-7200. Talk and text. We're talking about the best protest songs of all time. Yesterday was the anniversary of the recording of Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan, considered one of the greatest protest songs ever. And there are a ton of great ones out there. And that's what we're talking about. We want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Who requested Rawhide?
That was Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin. All right. There you go. Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about the greatest protest songs ever. Yesterday marked the 57th anniversary of the recording of Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan, which would go on to be the song that established Bob Dylan as the important artist that he was and still is. And so in honor of that, Paste Magazine, pastemagazine.com, of which there is a link on our Facebook page directly to the article, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us right now. They did a survey of their staff, their writers, their contributors, about what they think are some of the best protest songs ever. And so that's what we're talking about. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning, Chicago. Nick, how are you?
All right. What's up?
Take this job and shove it.
Sure, Johnny Paycheck. Only a guy named Johnny Paycheck could make a song called Take This Job and Shove It.
Yeah, Tom asked me who the guy was, and I knew it was a country song, but I didn't know exactly who it was. But, yeah, and I've actually been involved in that situation a few times during my life, and the reverse osmosis of that, too.
Well, it's a common thing. I can't tell you the number of times I'm sure that people have wanted to go up to their boss and tell them to take the job and shove it. it's one of the reasons why the song was such a big hit, because it was very identifiable to anybody who's ever had a job that they've hated. And then, all right, Steve, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 312-981-7200. Tom, you ever see the movie Take This Job and Shove It?
I can't say I have, Nick. I mean, I do love that song. That's a great song.
It's
Johnny Paycheck.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember who else was in it. Robert Hayes.
Oh, wow.
Barbara Hershey. It was 1981. Yeah, Take This Job and Shove It. It was inspired by the song Take This Job and Shove It. But I want to say, I know, almost positive it's Robert Hayes, and I'm almost positive it's Barbara, and I think Tim Thomerson was in it, if I remember correctly. All right, let's see. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
Good.
All right. Do you consider "Shout" from Tears of Fears a protest song?
I mean, I guess the lyrics could be interpreted like that. I don't necessarily think it's a protest song, but I mean, if I mean, the lyrics are kind of vague. about you know why you have to shout, but I mean, I guess you could. I guess some people could take Shout as a protest song. I guess.
Yeah, I kind of see it too. You can see every time you listen, it gives you that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Ike. Thanks, man.
No problem.
All right. Let's see. Two protest songs come to mind. Queensryche with Empire. I love that song. I love Queensryche. I think Operation Mindcrime is an unbelievable. We have not talked about concept albums in a long time on the show.
Yeah, that's one of them.
This is one of my favorite concept albums of all time, Operation Mindcrime.
They're the third best band with Queen in the title.
Queens of the Stone Age?
Yeah.
Better?
Yeah.
And then Queen being number one.
Yes.
Okay. I would put Queensryche above Queens of the Stone Age.
Well, then you'd be wrong.
No. I love Queensryche. I think they're a great band. I love the album Empire. I love Queen of the Reich. I go way back. I bought Queensryche with their EPs when they were like really badly dressed in the 80s. I think Jeff Tate's one of the best heavy metal vocalists ever.
No doubt they're good. No doubt.
And I just think they're great. I saw them on the Operation Mindcrime tour twice. One of the best shows I've ever seen in my life. C.W. McCall, Convoy. Convoy? It says, I love both, but as a truck driver of 30 years, Convoy holds more meaning. Convoy's a protest? Maybe I've probably never even listened to the lyrics of Convoy. Because it's mostly him talking into a CB. It's mostly talking. There's not a whole lot. And then it's like, we got a great big convoy going through the night. But it's mostly him going, yeah, breaker 199, yeah. Yeah, I'm driving a truck, yeah. Okay. Nancy in West Allis says, which side are you on by Pete Seeger? Well, Pete Seeger, there's a guy who wrote a lot of pretty terrific protest songs.
Can I throw one at you?
Go ahead.
You can get anything you want at Alice's restaurant.
Yeah, is that a protest song?
I think so.
It's a very long Thanksgiving song.
Yeah, but it was about protesting the war.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, his last name is Guthrie, so he's got that in his blood. So, John Prine with John Stone. Bonnie from Kenosha says that she likes We Are the World and Abraham, Martin, and John. Yeah, I Abraham, Martin, and John I can see. I can't stand We Are the World. I can't stand that song. No, can't stand it.
Somehow I'm not surprised to hear you say that.
Oh, God. Country Joe and the Fish, and then Vietnam Song, and then War Pigs by Black Sabbath, one of the greatest protest songs of all time. War Pigs. War Pigs, that is a fantastic song about Nam. And that is the creation, right? That song is the creation of heavy metal. What heavy metal would follow, it's all there. It's all there in War Pigs. One of the greatest songs ever written, War Pigs.
You ever hear of a song title Compared to What?
Yes.
That's the one I'd put on that list, yep. Too.
Bob Dylan with God on Our Side and The Times They Are a Changing. Well, Bob Dylan, I mean, we could talk all morning about Bob Dylan and protest songs. That's how this whole thing started. So, okay, we got a break. Everybody hang on. A couple of phone lines are open, 312-981-7200. And we're going to come back and on this, the day after the anniversary of the recording of Blowing in the Wind, we're talking protest songs right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. And we are going to pay tribute to the great Rip Torn, who passed away yesterday. And we'll hear some audio from some of his best work and talk about what a brilliant career he had and how unique and kind of crazy Rip Torn was in a lot of great way, a lot of great ways. And also, we'll have another round of Know Your Onion. This is where you have to... You tell the difference between a real news headline and a headline from The Onion, the satirical fake news newspaper. And if you can tell the difference between a bunch of them, then you win prizes. That's how it works. Tom's your host. That's coming up after the 4:30 news. Right now, we're talking about the best protest songs of all time. Yesterday marked the 57th anniversary of the recording of Blowin' in the Wind from Bob Dylan. And so that's where we are right now. So we want to hear from you guys. And let's see, here's John on WGN. Hi, John. John?
The protest song I remember was Give Peace a Chance by the Plastic Ono Band.
Yeah. Yeah.
And actually, there was like a local radio survey around here, and when it came out, I thought, yeah, if the Beatles changed their name to the, you know, the Plastic Ono Band, no, but it was Lennon's first
right.
solo recording, and of course it was. Oh, I'd say it really had an influence, although I don't think it was the number one song. But it
made an impact. It's a classic song. John Lennon's written a lot of protest songs. Lennon has written a catalog of protest songs, and many of them are very great. And that was one that made a huge impact.
Drugstore Truck Driving Man by Joan Baez.
Oh, yeah. Well, Joan Baez, another one. Joan Baez is another one. She wrote a lot of protest songs, too.
She performed at a Woodstock with some guy named Jeff something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Speaking of Rip Torn, did you know that he was married to Amy Wright, the actress who was in Breaking Away?
He was married to Amy Wright?
Yes.
No, I didn't know that. He was married to another actress, a real famous actress, and I'm blanking on her name right now because I'm an idiot, but we'll have to look that up. All right, John, thanks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see, here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, birthday boy. Happy belated.
Well, thank you.
I was going to bring up Country Joe and the Fish, but the name of that song was actually I'm Fixin' to Die Rag.
Right.
And people might remember it from the movie Woodstock, and it was done as a sing-along with a bouncing ball.
Right.
But as soon as you mentioned the topic, I thought of Buffy St. Marie, and the first song I thought of was 110 Soldier from Billy Jack.
Right.
But another song that's probably more quintessential from her was Universal Soldier.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 110 Soldier you couldn't get away from. When that damn movie was out, you just could not get away from that song. It was everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And she's got a whole, you know, probably more of her songs were protest songs than anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
And Century Joe is also, he's from a real left family. He's named after Joseph Stalin.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Wow. Okay.
Hey, did you get any unique gifts for your birthday?
No, I got some normal, just regular gifts.
Did you get something I sent you? In a mailing tube?
No.
Oh, man, you should have had it by now.
Okay.
All right.
I'll have to check the mail room here. You sent it here, obviously, so I'll have to check the mail room here. But no, I didn't. I'll have to check.
All right, it's in a mailing tube.
Okay, thanks, Doc.
All right, man.
See ya. Now I'm curious. By the way, he was married to Geraldine Page, and then he was married to Anne Wedgeworth, and Amy Wright was the last of his wives. We're talking about Rip Torn. Geraldine Page was the woman I couldn't remember her name. One of the greatest actresses ever, and I couldn't remember her name. Here's Diane on WGN. Hi, Diane.
Hey, Dick. How are you?
Okay.
I got a couple of Crosby, Stills, and Nash song called Almost Cut My Hair.
Mm-hmm.
I love that song. And Neil Young, of course, he also is a very protesty kind of person. And his song would be This Note's for You.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a protest of commercialization
right.
of songs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's calling people to the carpet here with this selling your songs to products.
Yeah.
For advertising.
Yeah. Neil Young has written a lot of protest songs.
Yeah, that's the one that came to mind.
Okay. All right, Diane,
I'm
thanks.
I'm sure there's others.
There are. Okay, thank you, Diane.
All righty.
Bye. We're getting some texts here, too. 312-981-7200. Let's see. 563 says, Dylan's Masters of War, except Eddie Vedder's version from the 30th anniversary concert, was haunting, and we both got to see Pearl Jam do it at Wrigley. Yes, we did. And again, another Dylan protest song right there. 773 area code says, War by Edwin Starr is one of the greatest protest songs. I love that song. Good God, y'all, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. 404 area code says it's probably more of a rebellion song than a protest song by Sam, but San Quentin by Johnny Cash. Mr. B says Neil Young, Southern Man. Oh, man, great song. And Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young with Ohio. Ohio is, you know, I mean, it's legendary. And I think they wrote it in like 2 hours or something like that. And it was released like right after the Kent State shootings. Like days after, if I remember correctly. So here are some other ones that they have listed here. I Am Woman by Helen Reddy, which is a classic. Also, The Byrds with Draft Morning. U2's Sunday Bloody Sunday. U2's immortal anthem quickly became one of the most popular songs as Bono and the band took their protest up several notches in response to the tragic event of Ireland's Bloody Sunday massacre. Its relentless wail and refrain leaves a lingering impression. Yeah, Sunday Bloody Sunday. Well, I mean, U2... Obviously, they've written a lot of political songs, some of them being protest songs. But yeah, but Sunday Bloody Sunday is fantastic.
Yeah, and it's of certain significance to a lot of members in my family because they watched this all happen.
Yeah,
they were growing up and young people during the Troubles, and they lost a lot of friends in the conflict. And so it's always been a song of particularly special significance to them because they really feel, you know, it helps them get through all those memories. I mean, they really, a lot of them won't even talk about it. They don't want to.
I'm assuming you've seen the Paul Greengrass movie.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Fantastic film. Fantastic.
Yeah. Hard to watch, but unbelievable.
Yeah, but the whole thing was hard to watch.
It's really kind of overwhelming and really melancholy to visit Belfast. You see that they've got, you know, there's a wall up, obviously. And we did the cab tour where we did a tour of all the murals that are up in the city. And it was very strange because the entire time we were in Ireland, we had beautiful weather. The only day and night that it rained was when we were in Belfast. That was the only time it rained, and it just seemed really weird that it would happen at that time. But there's a whole different feel, you know. When we were driving to Northern Ireland, and there was a real powerful moment. We were in the car and we're driving, and all of a sudden the radio station switched over to British run stations, and it was just really like, wow, okay. okay. So, but yeah, Sunday Bloody Sunday by U2. I mean, that goes without saying. It's fantastic. Donovan's Universal Soldier, written by Buffy St. Marie again, but brought to prominence by Donovan during the early folk phase. No single song better detailed the plight of a conscripted soldier or career mercenary than this mid-60s lament about the perils of war and the devastating effects that it leaves in its wake. The song makes the point that borders are meaningless when it comes to those in the front lines. It's a fantastic song. So, how about this? This is written by Curtis Mayfield. The Impressions recorded it. People Get Ready. He was in that band at the time in the Impressions, Curtis Mayfield, and People Get Ready foretold a turn in the tide as far as the battle for equality and recognition were concerned. Sung like the revered gospel song it is. It uses the popular imagery of a train to describe an evolution in attitude and action, leading to greater glories for those who have been oppressed and pushed aside. A true standard in every sense of the word, it hit the top of the charts on its original release, and it's been covered by scores of artists since, like Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen, and Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart's cover is pretty great. Rod Stewart's cover was like in the early mid to late 80s, and Jeff Beck does a fantastic. Jeff Beck does the guitar solo break in that. And it's unbelievable. That's one of my favorites. People Get Ready is one of my favorite protest songs of all time. It's such a great song. So, all right. Why don't we take a quick break here, and we'll come back and talk more protest songs about that and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us, talk or text.
Yes! Here comes Amos! Moses was a Cajun. He lived by himself in the swamp. They hunted alligator for a living. They just knock him in the head with a stone. The Louisiana law gonna get you, Amos. It ain't legal hunting alligator down in the swamp, boy.
Did this come from the Humboldt Park area?
Must have. This is what's going down over there.
Oh, man. I love that song, by the way.
It's great.
Jerry Reed. Ha ha! He does a lot of that.
Yeah.
Who requested that?
That is Steve. One here, Amos Moses.
Amos Moses by the late great Jerry Reed, in honor of what's going on. They need Amos Moses to head over to Humboldt Park.
Well, hunting gators is illegal in Illinois.
Not tonight. We were talking about this off the air. Tom and I were talking about this off the air. The timing of this story is just magnificent, because it coincides with the movie Crawl, which is being released in 2 days, and it's a movie about an alligator attacking people in a place where an alligator shouldn't be. So, I think there's just some weirdness about how this could be some fantastic publicity for Crawl. The box office numbers in the Humboldt Park area might go right through the roof over the weekend for that alligator movie. All right. Wild Card Wednesday continues. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right. Volunteers by Jefferson Airplane is also mentioned here. I can't say the name of this one on the air, but it's the Dead Kennedys, and it's Nazi Punks Blank Off.
Great song.
It is, but we can't play any of it.
No. Used to great effect in Green Room. I think that's one of the funniest scenes of that movie.
Yeah.
Where they decide to tick everyone off.
Yeah. More texts coming in. We're talking about protest songs. 815 area code, Taxman by the Beatles. I love that song.
Yeah. It seems like kind of a protest against, oh no, we're rich and famous now and we have to pay
it
taxes.
Is. Yeah. Yeah, but it also talks about like taking the pennies off your eye.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's a pretty strong.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. Also has one of the classic bass lines of all time.
Amazing.
And I think it's my second favorite Beatles bass line. Because Rain is my favorite Beatles bass line. And one of my favorite Beatles bass lines of all time. 225 area code. Can you get this one? It's very high on the list. We won't get to it for a few minutes here. But somebody, A Change Is Going to Come by Sam Cooke. The story of Sam Cooke and this song is amazing. And I got to say, one of the reasons I love Drunk History as much as I do is, one, it's hilarious. The whole concept of someone being completely loaded, trying to tell a story about history. Two, it's entirely accurate. Like, they research the hell out of every story that they do on Drunk History. They research it. They make sure that everything, all the details are absolutely accurate. And then you get the drunk person trying to tell it. And then, of course, you have, like, the famous actors doing the sort of lip-syncing of the... I love Drunk History. But they did the Sam Cooke story a couple of weeks ago. And it was really moving. Like, really, really, really moving. And there have been times when I've teared up at the end of an episode of Drunk History after laughing my ass off. But my favorite moments in Drunk History, Tom... You watch Drunk History, right? You've seen... I mean...
Yeah, try to catch it.
My favorite moments are anytime they cut to Derek Waters and he's laughing. Those are my favorite, because I love Derek Waters. I love him. You know, he co-created the show. But every time he's in a room with who was ever loaded and they're trying to tell the story and they make a mistake or they screw up or something, and when they cut to Derek Waters and he's losing it, those are my favorite parts of all the stories. Do we have the Sam Cooke song?
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's hear one of the greatest songs of all time.
I was born. In a little tent, oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Really, one of the greatest songs ever written. And one of the greatest performed by Sam Cooke. It is such an incredible performance and such an incredible song. And the tragic thing about it is that it was not a hit when it first came out. And it was inspired by an actual incident where he and his band were turned away from a white-only motel in Louisiana. So he wrote the song about that. That inspired the incident. And then he got shot in a motel. And he was killed. And he never got to see what an iconic song that became. Like, it was a disappointment in his lifetime. That song didn't chart very well, didn't go very far, didn't move many people. So he never got to see just how important that song was. I think it's one of the best songs I've ever written. It comes in at number 4 on the list of the 50 greatest protest songs of all time. 814 area code. Has anyone ever mentioned Ball of Confusion by The Temptations? That's a great song. That's a phenomenal song.
That is a Fly Jam Friday staple.
Oh, my God. That is such a great song.
That bass has got so much bounce, it'll leave your clothes static free.
It's just so insane. And it's such a great, I mean, lyrically, too. It is an angry song, and it's fantastic. Chris says from Midway, happy belated birthday. Thank you. My songs are Signs and Give Peace a Chance. Signs? Oh, Signs. And Signs says you got to have a membership card to get inside. That was like no long-haired people need apply. Well, yeah. I'm trying to remember who did the original. Signs was by... oh, man.
I thought there was a song where it's like, Signs.
That's it. That's the same song. Signs everywhere.
Who is the band that...
Well, they remade it. Tesla remade it.
Okay.
Oh, it's
Rod Stewart?
No.
It wasn't Small Faces?
No. It's like a four-man band, four-man something band. Oh, good Lord. I'm looking at my break here.
Five-man electrical band.
That's it. Five-man electrical band. That
and
was their
sign
song.
The sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply.
That's right. Wow, I'm going to be late to news. I didn't even look at this break. I'm an idiot, and I have the log right in front of me. All right, we'll be back in a minute.
Short people got... No reason. Short people got no reason. Short people got no reason to live. They got little hands, little eyes. They walk around telling great big lies. They got little no.
Tom, you were not even a zygote when this song came out, but the uproar that it caused was crazy. Little people were very angry about it. Shorter people were not pleased. There were protests. And then Randy Newman shows up on SNL. He's on SNL. I'll never forget it. And he's at the piano. And they introduce him. They say, ladies and gentlemen, Randy Newman. So there he is. And he goes, I would just like to say that there has been a lot of controversy surrounding my song, Short People. And I would like to say to the people who are offended. Then he launches into the song.
Because isn't it? It's not actually about short people.
No.
It's about, as far as I can tell, that song's about, like, hey, this is how we treat people.
Yeah. No, it's like
if you don't get it, you don't get it.
No, it's a great song.
It's an amazing song.
It's also a very funny song, like a lot of Randy Newman stuff is. But yeah. I just thought that was so funny, because this was at the height of the hatred for the song that he appeared on SNL.
Yeah.
And just basically
just went for it.
Just basically said, screw you, here's my song, I'm going to sing the song. So, who requested the Randy Newman?
That was from Russ.
All right, Russ. I bet Russ is 6'5".
Yeah, man. No one ever makes songs about tall people.
Haven't they?
No. Maybe they have.
I'm sure they have.
Tall people got every reason to live.
That's the sequel. That's the Randy Newman sequel. He's been waiting for all this Toy Story stuff to die down so he can jump back into that. Here's one, 262 area code. Zombie by the Cranberries. Zombie is a great song. A great song. How about Bruce Springsteen comes in on the list with Born in the USA, which, of course, was completely misinterpreted when it came out. And Reagan was using it and quoting it, not realizing that it's a protest song about a dissatisfied and damaged Vietnam veteran. That's what the song is really about.
I think that's what I'm all about.
Somebody just said, oh, there's a song called Born in the USA. Let's use that for the campaign. And then, of course, Bruce Springsteen said, no.
Hey, what about that song about the wall?
Yeah, the wall. Here's Frank on WGNI. Frank.
Morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right, what's up?
I got one from the 50s. I don't remember the artist, but it was in the mid-50s, and it kind of went like, let's forget about the crying and the dying and the shooting
and the
fella with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living.
Yeah,
let's
all
think about life. I think that's the title.
All over this world. Yeah, that's from the 60s. That's an early 60s. And, I know the song you're talking about. I just can't think of the title.
Yes. And then you've got Barry McGuire, The Eve of Destruction. He said,
yeah.
Our problems, they have Chinese music playing in the background like you hear in Vietnam, you know, with them flutes and such.
Yeah.
And then he says, don't attack America. Our problem doesn't lie in the rice paddies of Vietnam. It lies right here at home. He says, they say, don't attack America. Let them fall under the weight of their own ruin.
Yeah.
And then he thinks, so don't tell me we're not happy about this rock.
Yeah.
You know, he gets like down.
I just remember the song is like 9 minutes long. It's like, really, really long song. All right, Frank, thanks for the call.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right. 312-981-7200 for talk and text here. Another classic one that they mentioned in this article. If I Had a Hammer by Peter, Paul, and Mary, one of the leading groups of the early 60s, Peter, Paul, and Mary took inspiration from old-timey folk groups and reinvigorated it with pop harmonies that were fitting for the day. This cover, an old Pete Seeger tune, was one of the many hits that the trio had from their self-titled 1962 debut. Pete Seeger, another guy, wrote like tons of protest songs. How about Little Steven and Artists Against Apartheid with Sun City? It was in the 80s when there were these spate of artists getting together to write protest songs and raise money for certain causes. And this was protesting Sun City, which was an entertainment complex in South Africa that a lot of the artists at that time period would play. And so Springsteen, Bob Dylan, Lou Reed, U2, Keith Richards, Jackson Browne, Ringo Starr, Bonnie Raitt, Pete Townsend, Joey Ramone, Little Steven, and the Artists Against Apartheid appeared in the video and for Sun City. So it's that's a great song. They named the, you know, like Sun City is the name of the place, and they act, that's the title of the song, and it's in the refrain throughout the whole thing. We mentioned Country Joe and the Fish. That one's went out there already. They've got MIA on here.
Is it Paper Planes?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I love that song.
I do, too.
It's so good.
I love it. I also got to say, used to fantastic effect in Pineapple Express.
Yep.
Fantastic.
That's how I got introduced. But the rest of her catalog is crazy. She does some weird stuff.
I'm trying to remember who did her on SNL. I can't remember who
impersonated her.
Yeah, somebody who impersonated her on SNL, and I can't remember who it was. I know that Nasim Pedrad did Nicki Minaj. She did a fantastic Nicki Minaj. And it was the sketch where Beyonce and Jay-Z had their first kid, and everybody came over, like a bunch of celebrities came over to say hi to see the baby, and she came over as Nicki Minaj, like scared the hell out of Prince because Fred Armisen was doing Prince, and he hit, and then JT showed up.
Oh, Justin Timberlake?
Yeah, and he played Bon Iver. And he came in with a guitar, he had the beard, and he started singing.
Jeez.
He started singing, and he fell asleep. Bon Iver has fallen asleep.
Yeah. Was it Cecily Strong?
Cecily Strong.
That did MIA?
I don't know. I don't remember. Because I'm trying to think. Would it have been? I can't remember.
Because the one I found is when they did the song Bad Girls. Which is came out well after Paper Planes. So
okay,
I don't think on it.
All right, we have weather. It's coming up. All right, here's Donald on WGN. Go ahead, Donald.
Hi. Yeah. Where Have All the Flowers Gone? Such a classic.
It is a classic. Yes.
And I think this version with Marlene Dietrich.
Right.
Which makes it even more important, you know, because of the German significance in that, sure. You know.
Sure. Yeah. And her version of it is very haunting, too. No question about it.
Yeah, extremely haunting. Yeah. And anything that Dietrich did, you know, is kind of haunting anyway.
Yeah, so. No question about it. Okay, cool. Thank you, Donald.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Joni Mitchell, Big Yellow Taxi. And that Counting Crows version, I don't even acknowledge its existence. I remember the first time I heard when I first heard the Counting Crows cover of that, I was like, who the hell do you think you are, Adam Duritz, with your hair? I don't care if you slept with everybody on Friends, doesn't matter to me. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five with the message, please. An absolute classic. Absolute classic. This was in 1982 when this album came out and when the message came out. And it was one of the very first, because hip hop was in its infancy, you know, and it wasn't even called hip hop. It was called rap at that time, obviously. But it was in its infancy at that point. And to have a song come out. And it's called The Message. So clearly they had something on their mind. But it was a groundbreaking song, and it opened up the floodgates for other artists in the world of rap and hip hop to express their political views and to protest. And that opened up the floodgates, and a lot of artists followed. You know, most notably people like NWA and PE. Here's one of my favorites of all time, Elvis Costello and the Attractions, What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding. It's one of my favorite songs of all time, written by Nick Lowe. And Elvis Costello had it as a B-side, and then he added it as an afterthought to Armed Forces, and it became one of the great songs. I remember when the first Gulf War broke out in February or early 1991, when the first Gulf War broke out, MTV, when they were still playing music on this was at a time when they were actually still playing videos on MTV. MTV was doing, they were breaking in, like, Mr. Kurt Loder from MTV would bust in with, like, updates on what was happening in Iraq. And then they would repeat these sort of news highlights throughout the night, and then just play anti-war song videos. Like, they played War, the cover that Bruce Springsteen did. They played War. They played, I'm trying to remember what were the other ones they played, but they played What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding like 80 times a day during the 24-hour coverage, because that's when CNN was put on the map, when the first Gulf War happened, because it was 24 hours coverage and everybody was watching it. People couldn't believe what was happening, and people were sitting in front of their TV like bleary-eyed at 3:30 in the morning watching CNN. And then that's how they became CNN. So
it's so weird to think how recent that was.
91.
In the grand scheme of things.
1991, yep. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll wrap this up, and we've got we're going to give tribute to the great Rip Torn, and we've got we'll get through the best protest songs and take your calls and your texts as well. 312-981-7200. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. And that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Coming up after 4 o'clock, we are going to pay tribute to the great Rip Torn. We'll talk about his great career. We'll talk about our favorite performances and our favorite moments. And we'll open up the phone lines, and we also have some scenes from some of his work that we're going to play back. And again, at 4:30 after the news, we got another round of Know Your Onion. So get your brains working here and call in. And the first two people that call in will be our contestants. They will play separately, alone. Tom will read several news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from The Onion. And it's not as easy as it sounds, because we're living in a very weird world right now. And also coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here in WGN. We're talking about protest songs. By the way, who requested that?
So that was a little, I think his name is Mayor Hawthorne. Yeah, Mayor Hawthorne, coming to us from Bill in Montgomery.
All right, Bill in Montgomery. There you go. Okay, we're talking about the about protest songs. Yesterday was the 57th anniversary of the recording of Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. So we've been chatting about protest songs. All right. We'll do the top. Here are the top 20, according to this article. And here they are in Paste Magazine. Rage Against the Machine, Testify. That's the band I don't get.
What's there to get, man?
I don't like them.
Shocking.
I just don't.
They got hard riffs.
I don't.
They got great lyrics. They're angry.
Yeah, he's angry. He's from Libertyville, dude.
Who, Zach De La Roca?
No, Tom Morello.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that.
Tom Morello's from Rage Against Libertyville, pal.
Have you ever been to Libertyville, man?
I dated a girl from Libertyville.
It's hell, man.
Yeah, I've been to Libertyville many, many times. I dated a girl from Libertyville for a while. She lived in Libertyville, like right on the right there between that and Vernon Hills.
Did she seem pretty ticked?
No.
No, she's pretty.
No, she had a pretty good life. she grew up pretty. She was fine.
The man's keeping her down,
yeah.
Man.
Gil Scott-Heron with The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a classic. NWA with a, I can't tell you the title of the movie or the title of the song, but it involves the words the police.
FTP?
Yep. Boy, they were great. They were super great. Good. Man, oh man.
Engineer Chris is a huge fan of Eazy-E. If you've ever
wait a minute, what? he chooses Eazy-E over Ice Cube?
She loves Eazy-E.
Over Ice Cube.
Yeah.
In terms of solo work or yeah. or no, come on now. Come on now.
I think she thought Eazy-E was cute.
Oh. Do you remember the scene in obviously their relationship didn't end very well.
Yeah, I've heard no Vaseline.
Yeah, no Vaseline, which by the way, the scene in Straight Outta Compton where they intercut between Ice Cube recording No Vaseline and NWA and Paul Giamatti listening to it is about 5 of the best minutes I've seen in a movie in like 90 years.
Yeah, it's great.
It was unbelievable. I like that movie. I don't love it. There are flaws in it. But that sequence, oh my God. It was because I'm a huge fan of solo Ice Cube. This was before, you know, Boys in the Hood came out before Eazy-E died, obviously. So there's a scene in Boys in the Hood. I don't know if you remember this. There's a scene in Boys in the Hood where they're hanging out, and I think it's like Ice Cube is like, I don't know, he's standing like on a street corner or something. He's got a 40 in his hand, and a kid runs past him and like pushes something or steals something. And the kid's wearing an Eazy-E t-shirt. And so Ice Cube goes after him and beats the crap out of him. It's actually one of my favorite moments in that movie. Okay, Aretha Franklin, Respect. That's a great one. And let's not forget Otis's version of it, too. Buffalo Springfield, for what it's worth, that is unbelievable. Stop, Hey, What's That Sound? Everybody look what's going down. The Staple Singers, Long Walk to D.C. Okay, this is one of my favorite songs of all time. Creedence Clearwater Revival, Fortunate Son. One of the most angry Vietnam protest songs of all time is Fortunate Son. Told from the point of view of a soldier. I love that song. Edward Starr with War. Nina Simone, To Be Young, Gifted in Black. Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley. Fight the Power by Public Enemy. 9? Higher. Should be higher.
Probably higher.
Ohio by Crosby, Stills, and Nash and Young. Imagine by John Lennon. What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, number 6. Number 5, Sam Cooke, Time's Gonna Change, or Change is Gonna Come. Number 4, Blowing in the Wind, the one that started all this whole conversation. Number 3, We Shall Overcome, Pete Seeger. Number 2, Woody Guthrie, This Land Is Your Land. And number 1, Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit.
Haunting.
It's just a horrifying song, but it's beautiful.
I'd throw in, we had a listener, Diana, call in with this one, 99 Red Balloons.
Oh, sure. Nana. Yeah. Both versions.
Yeah. I used to be able to sing the entire thing in German because my dad taught me.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the list. But I just have to say, Fight the Power, I think, is too low. Because the first time I saw Do the Right Thing and that opening credit sequence happened, I was like, what's going on here? And by the time they got to the Elvis John Wayne line, I was like, okay. One of the greatest bands of all time, Public Enemy. All right, we got a break here. News is coming up next. There's a kind of hush. You request this?
No.
Oh.
I would not be so vain.
Okay. Who requested it?
That's coming to us from Glenn.
Glenn. Yeah. Yeah. It's Taste of Chicago. I just looked up on it and I read what I saw on TV because Taste of Chicago begins today. So instead of saying what I was going to say, I looked up, I saw the words Taste of Chicago and I said them because I'm an idiot.
Lefty.
I'm a lefty. That's what it is. Well, yeah. Wildcard Wednesday, man. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're here until 5 o'clock. Hey, coming up after the 4:30 news, another fantastic edition of Know Your Onion. Get ready to dial in. The first two callers in will be our two contestants who will play one at a time. And Tom is your host. He will read you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether they are real or from The Onion, the fake, satirical, funny newspaper. So you just say real or onion, and if you get a majority of them correct, you win a fantastic prize. And that's coming up here after the 4:30 news. So, okay. We lost Rip Torn yesterday, who was one of my favorite actors probably ever. And my major regret is that I never got to see him on stage. That's the one I've, you know, actor Rip Torn, who had earned Tony and Oscar nominations as well as an Emmy Award and two Obies, died Tuesday in Connecticut, in Lakeville, Connecticut. He was 88. Torn was equally at home in the comedy of the Men in Black film series or TV's Larry Sanders Show, for which he did win an Emmy, and in the drama Sweet Bird of Youth or Anna Christie, to name two of the numerous classic works of theater that he appeared in. The actor was nominated for a Supporting Actor Oscar in 1984 for his work as a father who confronts tragedy in Martin Ritt's Cross Creek, one of the many rural dramas in which he appeared during his career. He drew a Tony nomination in 1960 for his first performance on Broadway as the sadistic son of the town boss in Elia Kazan's original production of Tennessee Williams' Sweet Bird of Youth. Torn later replaced Paul Newman in the starring role of Chance Wayne. He, Newman, and Broadway co-star Geraldine Page, whom Torn married in 1963, recreated their roles in the 62 film adaptation. Torn was also stars as Boss Finley in the 1989 NBC adaptation of the play directed by Nicholas Rogue. Unlike many actors who take the New York stage before making their film debut, he headed to Hollywood after college, making his big screen debut at an uncredited role in Kazan's 1956 Baby Doll, and then appearing in the director's A Face in the Crowd, which, by the way, is a ridiculously great movie. But Torn soon decided that he had to put his cart before the horse, and he headed east. In New York, he studied performance with modern dance Martha Graham and at the Actors Studio with Lee Strasberg. Torn brought his aspiring cousin Sissy Spacek into the Actors Studio. And so Torn's initial success in New York came not on the stage, however, but in the prestigious anthology shows of the 1950s live television, such as Omnibus, Playhouse 90, and the United States Steel Hour. The actor's film career began to gain steam with a supporting role in Gregory Peck's brother-in-law in the 1959 Korean War pick Porkchop Hill, and the part of Judas in he played Judas in Nicholas Ray's 1961 epic King of Kings. Meanwhile, on Broadway, he followed Sweet Bird of Youth with roles in Daughter of Silence, Eugene O'Neill's Strange Interlude, Blues with Mr. Charlie. Those were all in the early 60s. He made his off-Broadway debut in O'Neill's Desire Under the Elms, and in 1967 he won an Obie for his role in Norman Mailer's Deer Park. But Torn was developing a reputation for an erratic behavior. He worked for racial integration in theater, but ended up alienating Blues for Mr. Charlie author James Baldwin, even after defending the then shocking play about racism in America. Another incident happened, which we mentioned a little bit earlier. He was originally hired to play the Jack Nicholson role, and they had a get together. And at dinner, tempers flared. And in 1994, Hopper claimed that on the Tonight Show that Rip Torn had attacked him with a knife. Torn sued Hopper for defamation. He claimed it was Hopper who pulled the knife on him, and he won $950,000 in court. Despite the ultimate legal victories, Torn felt that Hopper's version of what had happened, which was repeated over in years and Hollywood circles before Hopper related it to Jay Leno on national television, hurt his career. In any case, Torn was a busy actor during those two decades before he started his six-year run on the Larry Sanders Show. So he's been in a ton of stuff, and just you know. Inexplicably, I watched Airplane 2 over the weekend, last weekend. He's in that. And he's very funny in it. He's only in, he's like three or four scenes, but he's very funny in it. But he could do anything. This guy could do anything. He could do comedy. He could do serious stuff. He did, you know, broad comedy like Dodgeball.
Down Periscope.
And Down Periscope. And he did, you know, like he could do heavy drama. But he was often, it got to the point, and by the way, he was also in Don Coscarelli's The Beastmaster. He was the villain in The Beastmaster. Don, by the way, posted a really nice remembrance on his Facebook page yesterday about that. So he was in a bunch of stuff, and here are some of the things that I love. Why don't we what stuff do we have? Do we have some Larry Sanders?
Yeah, we've got Larry Sanders, Artie Gets Drunk.
Okay.
We've got Dodgeball, Dodge right. Wrench, and then a little bit of Defending Your Life.
Okay. So we got those. If you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to break for the weather in just a couple of minutes, and when we come back, we'll listen to some of his work. And again, if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. He was in the Whoopi Goldberg vehicle, The Telephone. It was not a success critically or commercially. He would still do work on stage, off Broadway. And that's when I remember one of the trips that I went when I went to New York, he was doing a show and we didn't go. That's like one of the biggest regrets ever, that I never got to see Rip Torn on. I could have seen Rip Torn on stage. He had a guest role on Chicago Hope. He got an Emmy nomination for his work on the CBS telepic, The Atlanta Child Murders. And he got nominated 6 times for an Emmy for Larry Sanders, and then he did win in 1996. He was in Anna Christie in 1993, and then he was in Horton Foote's The Young Man from Atlanta in 1997. That's the show I could have seen him in. In 2004, he shined in the Gene Hackman, Ray Richmond presidential comedy, Welcome to Mooseport. Roger Ebert said, quote, Rip Torn plays the Karl Rove role. What a pleasure Torn is. Like Christopher Walken and Steve Buscemi, he makes us smile just by appearing on screen. He was many considered the best thing in Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette, which I don't agree with. He's great in it, but I love that movie.
Yeah.
He had a recurring character on... Oh God, how far did I go? Oh man, how can I forget 30 Rock?
Wait, who was he in 30 Rock?
He was the CEO of General Electric.
Oh yeah.
How could I forget that? We could have dug up some audio on that. Oh, he was great on that. He was great. He was a recurring character. And now I'm looking at this. He got an Emmy nomination in 2008 for it. Oh, he was so funny on that. How could I forget about 30 Rock? Fantastic. So, anyway, that's Rip Torn. If you have any favorite moments or favorite performances or movies or TV shows that you loved him in, we would love to hear from you. I think he's one of the best actors that's ever walked the planet and could do anything and was obviously particularly really brilliantly and unbelievably funny. And he was a notable drinker. And he got into a brawl with Ernest Hemingway, which is documented on film and you can see it on YouTube. It's insane. All right, welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah. Who requested that?
That's Big Ed wanted to hear a little ZZ Top and Jeff Beck.
All right, ZZ Top and Jeff Beck. All right, Rip Torn passed away, and that's who we're talking about right now. He's 88 years old. He could do anything, and he was, you know, remembered as a great dramatic actor. He was a little bit strange, and he had a bit of a drinking problem. He was great on stage. He was great in movies, and he was great on TV. And he was also unbelievably funny. And is, I think, remembered mostly for the stuff a little bit later in his career when he really hooked into the comedy genre. So why don't we hear the scene from Defending Your Life. Defending Your Life, the brilliant masterpiece by the great Albert Brooks, which was about living in the afterlife, examining, you die, you're in this sort of purgatory where they take you to court, they look at some of the days of your life, and they examine whether you can move on or not. Rip Torn greets Albert Brooks and explains how much of their brain that they actually use. So this is Defending Your Life.
Thought what would be? Where am I? Is this heaven?
No, it isn't heaven.
Is it hell?
No, it isn't hell either. Actually, there is no hell. Although I hear Los Angeles is getting pretty close. Well, Daniel, let me tell you what's going on. When you're born into this universe, you're in it for a long, long time. You have many different lifetimes. And after each lifetime, there's an examining period which you're in now. You see, every second of every lifetime is always recorded. And as each one ends, we sort of look at it. Look at a few of the days, examine it. And then if everybody agrees, you move forward.
What do you mean move forward?
I mean move forward, continue onward. The point of this whole thing is to keep getting smarter, to keep growing, to use as much of your brain as possible. For example, I use 48% of my brain. Do you know how much you use?
47?
3.
I'm sorry?
3?
I use 3% of my brain?
Yes, don't worry about it. Everybody on Earth uses 3% of their brain. 3 to 5%. That's why they're there.
3%? 3%? You mean nobody on Earth uses more than that?
When you use more than 5% of your brain, you don't want to be on Earth, believe me. Well, not that your takeout places aren't lovely, but there are many more exciting destinations for smarter people. Now, being from Earth as you are and using as little of your brain as you do, your life has pretty much been devoted to dealing with fear.
It has?
Well, everybody on Earth deals with fear. That's what little brains do.
What are little brains?
That's what we call you folks behind your back.
It is such a brilliant movie. It is such a brilliant movie. And he is so great in it and so funny in it. The great Rip Torn. Okay. Let's see. Let's get another one here before we have to break for the news. All right, he was nominated 6 times for an Emmy, playing Artie, the producer of the Larry Sanders Show. And Larry Sanders Show was a classic, one of the greatest sitcoms of all time, one of the greatest shows ever, loaded with incredible writing staff and an unbelievable cast, of course, led by the late great Gary Shandling, and they had a lot of great guest stars. Yeah. So we do have some Larry Sanders here that we can hear. In this scene, they're throwing a Gary Shandling and his partner are throwing a party. And in these scenes that were cut together by someone, this shows Artie getting progressively drunker with his signature drink that he likes so much. So this is from the great Larry Sanders.
Hey, boy. Hey. You two look like you need a salty dog. Good bartender doesn't even know the proportions. Just because Cheers was a hit, every ass thinks he can mix a drink.
Excuse me a sec.
Listen.
What the?
Oh, what the?
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know, but as soon as I finish this salty dog, I'm going to rip that camera from his hands and tear him a new way.
All right, having a good time, huh? All right, listen now.
Jeannie, she's still changing?
She is still changing. Listen, I don't understand women. She's
I agree. Here, have a salty dog. Drink it, you Jeannie, sweetheart. Jeannie, the last thing this house needs is tough love. Jeannie! Open this door! Jeannie! Hey. 5 marriages. And now I'm going downstairs and I'm going to take care of that sack of human
with a camera.
There you go. So that's him getting progressively drunker on salty dog.
I just lose my mind when he says, why don't you just have a salty dog?
Yeah. And he pulls it out of midair.
Yeah.
It's like Gary Shandling is standing next to him. And that was his drink of choice, was salty dog. You never really know what a salty dog is.
He gets these proportions wrong.
There's salt around the rim of the glass, and I'm not really sure why, because Cheers was a hit. There's a lot more. Here's the thing about, you know, I think Artie was probably the best role he ever had on Larry Sanders. He was a highlight every single episode. He was a highlight and was brilliantly funny and unbelievable on it. The problem with having a radio show where the FCC has rules is that we can't play a lot of those. Well, you heard we had to beep like 12 words just in that 2-minute clip. But almost everything, you know, that's available online from Larry Sanders that involves Rip Torn is unplayable on the it's unplayable on the radio. So. Okay, we're going to break here, and we're going to take a break for the news, and then when we come back, it's time for Know Your Onion. So you're going to want to call in right now. First two people through will be our two contestants. They will play separately and see if they can win. The idea here for Know Your Onion is Tom is your host, and he is going to read you some news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from the Onion, real or onion. Call in right now. Phone lines are open. First two people through will be our two contestants for the morning. 312-981-7200. You win some lovely prizes. Nobody goes away a winner on this one. 312-981-7200.
No one goes away a winner?
No one goes away a loser on this one. So call us up right now. 312-981-7200. Again, first two people through will be our contestants to play Know Your Onion. And we'll get to that right after the news, which is after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah.
Any song, any artist, anything. 312-981-7200. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on this Wednesday morning. Who was that and requested?
So that was Sun Ra with Pink Elephants.
Oh, okay. They were covering it from
Dumbo,
From Dumbo, yeah.
Yeah, Pink Elephants. And that was requested by Mike.
Okay. There you go. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? We are here until 5 o'clock, and then Steve Grzanich comes in with the opening bell. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. So we have our contestants, and we are about to play another round of Know Your Onion. This is the game that Tom hosts, and he will read you news headlines. And if you can tell the difference between a real headline and a headline from the satirical newspaper The Onion, then you're going to do well. He'll read a 5 total. If you get a majority of them correct, you are a big winner. But nobody leaves here a loser. Nobody leaves here empty-handed, so just know that. So anyway, shall we begin?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
I'm always amazed by how the crowd increases every week.
I think we're up to 70,000.
70,000
in studio.
That's right. They're very quiet right now, but
that's amazing.
It's unbelievable.
They fade exactly as you need them to.
Exactly right. So it's Know Your Onion. Let's see. Our first guest is in Streamwood, and it's Glenn. Hi, Glenn.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
All right. Now, do you know what the onion is?
I've read it a few times. I haven't read it recently, but I'm kind of familiar with its style.
Yeah, it's a fake newspaper that does.
Doesn't it originate in Madison, Wisconsin, or whatever?
It did. Yes, indeed. So you just have to be able to identify.
Anymore?
You have to identify the difference. You know, he's going to read a news headline to you, and you have to identify whether it's real. You say real or onion. All right.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Okay, Glenn. Here is your first headline. Frustrated Subway marketers scrap $150 million Jeffrey Epstein ad campaign. Is that real or is that The Onion?
It's got to be The Onion.
Let's see. Could be. Let's see. Oh, very nice. Cha-ching.
I saw that one yesterday.
Yeah.
the image is hilarious. The image is absolutely hilarious. So, all right. Nice job. One for one, Glenn. All right, Tom.
All right. Next one here. Mitch McConnell likens himself to Obama, saying, "We are both the descendants of slave owners." Mitch McConnell likens himself to Obama, saying that we are both the descendants of slave owners. Is that real or is that The Onion?
It's got to be The Onion.
Let's see.
No, Glenn, really. That's real.
I know he had a bunch of slaves.
No, that's real. That's real. That's Mitch McConnell, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, that's real.
That's coming to us from NBC News.
Yeah, no. That I about fell off the couch. Okay. All right, you're 1-1, Glenn.
Okay.
All right, here's your next one, Glenn. Skater slain at skateboard park gets one last ride down a ramp in his coffin, thanks to family and friends. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion. That is The Onion for sure. That sounds like an Onion story.
No!
That is not The Onion. That is a real thing.
It's a real headline.
Someone actually did that?
Yeah.
Yep. This is coming to us from the Associated Press. The family and friends of a skater who perished, unfortunately, in an accident, allowed him one last ride at the local skate park in his coffin.
All right, Glenn, here's the deal. If you get,
oh, my goodness.
You have to get the next two correct.
I must.
You have to get the next two correct, okay? All right.
Okay.
All right. Entitled Burger King employee wants $15 an hour just for dealing with the worst of America every day. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I know I went with The Onion before. I'm sticking with The Onion on this one.
Let's see.
Excellent!
Very good, Glenn.
Got it. All right. Wait. But now you're down to your last chance, Glenn. This is very this is very suspenseful. You got two right and two wrong. You got to get a majority.
Let's check time.
So you got to get this one. All right. Here we go.
All right. Let's
the championship
go.
Round.
All right. Let's go to the world of sports. Adam Silver sends league-wide memo to the NBA just asking players where they want to play. Is that real or is that The Onion?
But even though they do that, that's got to be the Onion, because if you're not a free agent,
yeah, that's correct. Very much correct.
You pulled it out of the, you pulled it out there, Glenn. Very good.
Thank you. You
got three out of five.
I'm excited.
That means you get Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnatis.com. Congratulations. You got to hang on, Glenn.
Excellent.
Okay?
Excellent. Thank you.
All right,
Nick.
Glenn, hang on.
Excellent.
Okay, hang on, Glenn. All right, just hang on. Okay. All right, are we ready for our next contestant?
I believe so.
All right, well, let's bring this one in. Now, this is a person who's calling from Florida. Bob, you're calling from Florida?
That's right, Nick. How you doing?
All right, what's up?
We've been listening to you ever since we lived in Chicago, so thank Alexa.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. That's great. Well, okay, so here's the deal. You understand the concept here, right? You know, The Onion is a fake comedy satirical newspaper, and you have to decide whether the headline that is read is real or Onion. Got it?
All set.
Okay, here we go.
All right, here's your first headline. Presidential candidate John Hickenlooper sets ambitious $250 fundraising goal for next debate cycle. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to go with The Onion on that one.
Oh, I like that.
Very good. That is The Onion.
That's The Onion. $250.
I know, that's ambitious for him. Good old Hickenlooper.
All right.
All right, next up, an Oregon man in a onesie and his cat named Spaghetti were found hiding in a crawl space during a home burglary. Is that real or is that The Onion?
This would be scary if it's real, but I'm going to go with The Onion.
You think that one's The Onion? Let's see.
Oh, that's real.
Very real. A cat named Spaghetti.
A cat named Spaghetti. That's the weird part of it. He named a cat Spaghetti. Okay, you're 1-1. 1-1, I should say, Bob.
All right, next up, here we go. A loud fart gives away a suspect's hiding spot and leads to his arrest. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Oh, man. I'm
I know this happened, but I think it's going to be Anya's story.
Let's see.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
No, that's real.
That's very real.
That's real, Bob. And by the way, that's local.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. That's the best spaghetti.
That's a local story. Okay, you have to get the next two. Again, our second contestant, taking it down to the wire, making it suspenseful and interesting. You got to get these two, Bob.
All right, here we go.
All right, last two.
All right, the producers of Big Little Lies are now forced to blur Reese Witherspoon's face out of they have to blur her face out of the show after realizing that she never signed a release. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm sticking with Onion.
Let's see.
Shawn.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Back on it here.
That's hilarious. All right, you're down. Now we're down to the wire again. So
yeah. Keeping the show interesting.
This is
here.
The last one.
Last one.
Last
here.
One, and you got to get it right. Okay, Bob.
All right.
Tourists are going gaga for a Japanese museum dedicated to poop. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going real with this.
He says it's real. Is it?
Woo-hoo!
That is very real.
Yeah, it's real. There's a lot of weird stuff in Japan. There's just a lot of weird stuff in Japan. All right, Bob, congratulations. Now, here's the deal. I know that you are in Florida, but you know Lou Malnati's ships it to you. They can ship your pizza frozen, and then you just cook it.
Awesome.
Yeah, so Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's deep dish pizza, the best. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. And again, you can use your gift certificate that we're sending you to get a couple of pizzas, and they'll send it right to you. It'll be shipped to you, and all you got to do is throw it in the oven, and you're ready to go.
That's perfect, Nick. Appreciate that.
All right, Bob. Thanks, buddy, and thanks for listening, okay? Hang on.
All right, thanks.
He's got to get your info, so hang on. All right, Bob's going to hang on. There you go. Nice job. And again, our listeners making it very suspenseful, taking it down to the very last headline. Are they going to win or aren't they going to win? I was nervous. Okay, so that's Know Your Onion. We do it every Wednesday morning at 4:30, so study up on your news headlines during the week, and we'll do it again next Wednesday morning at 4:30. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720. Did my dad request a song?
He did.
Okay,
he did.
What was that one? Just so we can.
So that was Help Me.
Was that Brian Ferry?
Yeah, a little Brian Ferry, okay. From The Fly.
The Fly. Okay.
Yeah, I almost totally forgot.
Yeah, my dad is listening, I believe, and will punch you if you don't play the requested song for Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, baby, Wild Card Wednesday.
Well, especially with that spelling.
That's right. Exactly. By the way, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 a.m. A really great, versatile, and also unbelievably hilarious actor, Rip Torn, passed away, known for his incredible work in movies like Defending Your Life and in TV shows like 30 Rock and especially The Larry Sanders Show. And unique, great stage actor, great film actor. An interesting and kind of a crazy dude, but leaves behind a plethora of incredible stuff that we can watch and enjoy. And he turned out to really jump into the world of comedy during a good portion of his career. Okay, we have my dad's request for Wild Card Wednesday.
Yes, and I've never heard this before, but this is spectacular.
You've never heard this before?
Nah.
Okay.
Bangkok, Oriental City, and the city don't know what the city is getting. The creme de la creme of the chess world in a show with everything but Yul Brynner. Time flies, doesn't seem a minute since the Tyrolean spa had the chess bars in it. All change, don't you know that when you play at this level, there's no ordinary venue.
Yeah, One Night in Bangkok. This is from a Broadway musical.
From chess?
Yeah, an incredibly successful Broadway musical.
Oh my God!
Yes,
we're out of ideas.
If I'm not sure. I think that's Andrew Lloyd Webber. if I'm not mistaken.
The unacceptable face of modern theater.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that, and that became a huge hit, like a huge single with a video and everything. But it's originally from that Broadway play. Hey, by the way, coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So in addition to starring in a lot of really great stuff, Rip Torn was in a movie that everybody on the planet hates except me. And I love it. He's in Tom Green's masterpiece, Freddy Got Fingered. He plays Tom Green's dad. And it is and by the way, Julie Haggerty is the mother and plays the wife in it. Everybody on the planet hates this movie but me. And I think Rip Torn's performance is just ridiculously funny and obscenely weird. And there's a famous moment in the movie where Tom Green plays this unemployed goofball skateboarding cartoonist or artist who moves back home, lives back home with his parents, and Rip Torn can't stand it. He hates him, wants him out of the house. They come home one morning, and Tom Green, who's been sitting at home all day, has decided that he's going to get a keyboard and string up some sausages that are attached to some gloves that he's wearing. And so every time he hits the keyboards, the sausages move back and forth in rhythm with what he's playing. Rip Torn comes in and sees that. And, of course, you have one of the greatest and catchiest tunes in film history.
Sausage. Oh, look, honey, our boy's a genius.
Sausage. He's rigged a pulley system so he can eat sausage and work on his stupid drawings.
And being creative? Now, if you'll excuse me, I still have some work to do.
Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausages? Daddy, would you like some sausage? Sausages! Sausages!
Now, you just get outside and you just cool off!
If this were Pakistan, you would have been sewing soccer balls when you were 4 years old.
So I don't even know what that line means. If this was Pakistan, you'd be sewing soccer balls when you were 4 years old, is what he said.
Well, he'd be useful. He'd be in like a sweatshop.
Oh, my God. I love that movie so much. And I it's just so insane. All right. One more clip to play. Another comedy, a cult comedy that a lot of people really love. Dodgeball, where he played like Patches.
Patches O'Houlihan.
Patches O'Houlihan, who was a legend in the dodgeball world, and he was going to teach this new dodgeball team led by Vic Vaughn and Justin
Vince
Long.
Vaughn.
Vince Vic Vaughn.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I could actually. Vince Vaughn and Justin Long and a couple of other goofballs. He's going to train them on how to be great at dodgeball. He's in a wheelchair and he's Patches. And so this is a scene from Dodgeball.
You're going to learn to be true dodgeballers. Then you've got to learn the 5 D's of dodgeball. Dodge, duck, dip, dive, and dodge. If you master the 5 D's, no amount of balls on earth can hit you. Go ahead.
Yeah, shouldn't we, like, learn by dodging balls that are thrown at us, or...
That's what this sack of wrenches is for. If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
What?
Any other questions?
Yeah. Patches, are you sure that this is completely necessary?
Necessary? Is it necessary for me to drink my own urine?
Probably not.
No, but I do it anyway because it's sterile and I like the taste.
I'm not crazy about that movie. I love it. I don't think it's very funny. I think he's great in it. I think Rip Torn is great in it, and I think the Gary Cole and Jason Bateman,
Stephen Root.
Yeah, I like Stephen Root, but I just don't think I can't stand Ben Stiller in it. I can't stand Ben.
You don't
Stiller.
Like him as White Goodman.
I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's funny at all. And that was getting to the point where Vince Vaughn just was like wearing out his welcome with me. But all the Rip Torn stuff is gold in it. It's all gold. And the commentary by Bateman and
Gary Cole
is that's the funniest stuff in the movie.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it plays out.
But it's undeniably very popular and has a massive cult following.
Yeah.
And it just never did it. It just never really, really did it for me. But I did love Rip Torn in it, as I did pretty much everything he did.
By the way, that that album Chess.
Yeah.
So
Simon McIntosh, Cameron McIntosh.
Let's see. Well, I looked up who did the music.
Okay.
And it was Benny Anderson and Bjorn Ulvaeus.
Oh, right.
The two B's in ABBA.
That's right. That's what it was. That's what it was. Okay. But it was a big hit. It was a big hit on Broadway. I remember Roy Leonard Roy used to take listeners on New York trips. And they would go to New York, they would spend a weekend there, they would have like dinner together, and then they would go to two or three plays while they were there. And he took a couple of trips out to New York to take people to see Chess. So
it's wild.
Yeah, so it was a big hit on Broadway, and then that song was a big hit. And it was a big hit on MTV too.
Yeah, it's a very slick video.
The video was all over the place. So I still can't figure out why my dad chose that as his wild card request.
I just hope he doesn't hit me.
No, he won't. He's fine.
I don't know. He looks like he's got a mean right hook.
He does.
You know, he's working at that Jules.
That's right.
And keeping he's strong.
Nothing but building up muscles at the Jules. I mean, look at me. I worked there for 11 years. You look at my physique.
God, you're built like a, like a brick house.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, tomorrow is Thursday, and it's been a couple of weeks, but we're going to have Dan Feinberg on. We got a lot of TV to talk about, and he's going to join us again next week. We'll get him next week because the Emmy nominations are announced, and we want to get his response to it the morning after, and we'll talk about that. But we've got a ton of TV to talk about, and that'll be tomorrow morning. It'll also be Triple Play Thursday, and there you go. All right, let's take a break here, and the news is coming up after this.